It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Aunt Pruitt's here. Stacy has the week off, but we've got a great guest instead. Douglas Rushkoff joins us. He is a author, prolific author, professor, media studies expert, the author of a number of fantastic books, including his newest. We'll talk about The Survival of the Richest, Escape Fantasies of the Tech Billionaires, next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 683, recorded Wednesday, September 28th, 2022. Finnish foliage. Listeners of this program get an ad-free version if they're members of Club Twit. $7 a month gives you ad-free versions of all of our shows, plus membership in the Club Twit Discord, a great clubhouse for Twit listeners. And finally, the Twit Plus feed, with shows like Stacy's Book Club, The Untitled Linux Show, The Giz Fizz, and more. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit, and thanks for your support. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, a show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse and a very special guest with us this week. But first, let me introduce our regular panelists from Hands-On Photography, Aunt Pruitt. Good to see you, Aunt.
Hello, sir. And I didn't do the fingers that way this time.
Oh, yeah. The Cub Scout salute. That's okay. That's okay. Aunt is also community manager at Club Twit and the Discord. And, of course, you do a great job there. We've got Stacy's Book Club coming up. I'm reading A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet right now.
Yep.
Just for the
book so far.
Stacy does have the week off this week, but of course, Jeff Jarvis is here. And we must introduce Jeff.
Hold on. No, you can change the lower third now. I now have something to plug.
Oh, what? Your book?
bit.ly/bygutenberg.
bit.ly/by-Gutenberg. I'm guessing, knowing your love of money, Gutenberg.
Totally buy Gutenberg.
Is Gutenberg and B-E-R-G or B-U-R-G?
Gutenberg, yes, B-E-R-G. And
look at that, from the Bloomsbury Press.
If you so desire, the audience can help choose the cover to the book.
I notice you have a generic cover at this point.
That's what they do, but there's four covers on line 68, which we can get to later.
All right.
To get the audience
later
and
in the show.
Your
later in the show.
Aesthetic opinion on
this. Oh, I'm so glad. Congratulations. That's
congratulations,
wonderful.
Congratulations, sir.
June 1st, the ship date, 2023. Yeah,
takes forever, right? Yes, you're about to.
Yes. Oh, my. Jeez. Jeff is also the Leonard Tau Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Jeff taught a class with our guest, our special guest this week. Douglas Rushkoff is here because I could not resist. Hello, Douglas. Great to have you.
Hey. Great to be back with you.
You are on Team Human, so congratulations. We always like to have humans on the show. Mm. He's also the author of a book called Survival of the Richest, Escape Fantasies of the Tech Billionaires. This is a subject worthy of TMZ. I can't wait. I cannot wait. Cannot wait to get into this. But as I started saying, you and Jeff Jarvis taught a class together at CUNY, right?
We did. We just finished. It was a course in sort of an imagining of a do-over. What if we could? What if you were in charge of the internet, redesigning the internet? What would you do? Well, you are in charge of the internet, so do it.
Oh.
It was sort of that.
What a great idea!
Yeah.
And did you come up with any designs?
A lot of people were interested in policy and regulation, which is interesting. You know, there's a changing the way people interact on these platforms. But there were some ideas. A lot of them had to do with, you know, the way people treat each other, ways to reduce bullying, ways to help people get better information. And I thought it was optimistic was kind of the fun part about it. You know, to see people in their 20s saying, "Oh, we can make this better."
What was interesting is that I didn't realize till halfway through the class that they all came on the internet in conscious form after the early heady hopeful days.
So oh, interesting.
Douglas ran one class where he had to teach them about the early days of the web and about things that came before, and they didn't know any of this stuff, right? It's and so it's really, and these are graduate students, yeah. So they're in their 20s.
I know. It was really cool to see. You know, we showed them like this is the way a BBS worked, or this was FidoNet. This is IRC. It's kind of like chat, except you're in these little rooms, and they're like, oh wow, that's neat. You know, or even just showing them, you know, FidoNet, which was basically an early decentralized network. It was an internet with no real server. It got them thinking differently. Remember the one woman who did she did a project where people would have to go to this community center to use a computer. We used to have cyber cafes. You'd log on in a place with all these people drinking coffee. It was kind of fun. Remember? Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the old days. We're all old enough. Even Ant's old enough to remember those days.
Douglas is really a pioneer.
I remember some of that.
I remember Douglas back from, you know, kind of the golden days of the early 90s. In fact, we had you on the screensavers about 20 years ago, more than member of the cyberpunks, you know, Are You Serious and Krasner and Timothy Leary. And
was my crowd. Yeah.
Yeah.
The heady, wonderful days. My first book was called Siberia, C-Y-B-E-R-I-A. I got on the Larry King show. I remember. And Larry King, he's like,
what is this internet? Douglas?
Exactly. He goes, what is it? What is cyberspace? And I said, Larry, you're in cyberspace right now.
Ooh. 2002. I think we interviewed you when Coercion came out, which was your Martha.
Yeah. Although I did an earlier one. You had a show before that I was on.
The site. That was with Soledad, yes. That
Soledad.
Soledad was not wearing a kilt. I'm sorry.
No.
And what book was that we were talking about on that one?
Gosh, probably Media Virus.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've been you've been around covering this stuff for a long time.
Yeah.
Douglas, what were you going to be before you became Internet Boy?
A filmmaker,
I was a theater
right?
guy.
Yeah, theater. Okay.
Theater.
Right, so it's
yeah,
pure theater
I was into theater.
So what,
and I
what
actually got
change?
I got fed up with theater because I was doing a production of Three Penny Opera where the cheapest seat was $40. And I was thinking, what am I stuck in this elitist, closed-ended thing? I was sick of it. It was expensive. And it was also the narrative in theater was so predictable. You know, crisis, climax, relief. It was that one same Aristotelian arc. And I was into fantasy role-playing games and hypertext and choose-your-own-adventure. So I thought, oh, look, I'm going to go to the internet where money is not going to matter to anybody. It's just crazy nerds who just want to have fun. It's not going to be all that commercial crap of the theater world. Yeah.
I wish it won. Honestly, I think I wish it were that way, Douglas. I don't. Do you feel like the internet has failed us?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I spent, as Jeff knows, I spent a lot of time after, you know, Mondo 2000 was basically usurped by Wired magazine.
Right.
You know, and the story of the unbridled collective imagination was kind of replaced with the story of how are we going to make people more predictable through stickiness and surveillance in order to make more money? And you know, so I took it really personally, I guess, that these tools that were made for people to use were now being used on people. And I wrote a lot about that and blamed rapacious venture capitalism for it almost entirely. You know, some great kid is at Stanford in their dorm room, come up with an idea. The venture capitalist comes up. Come on, kid, leave school in freshman year and, you know, transfer parental authority onto me and pivot your company a little bit away from that good for people thing and more for the get from people thing. And, but now that I look back on it, it's not just the money that the way we develop technology from the beginning, you know, way back, has something to do with a kind of a nerdy isolation and fear. I remember I was with Timothy Leary when he was reading Stuart Brand's book on the Media Lab. Mm. Remember the Media Lab?
Oh, yeah.
Negroponte and Media Lab.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting with, I have it here. I was just, where is it?
This is a great book.
It's a great book.
And look Timothy, at that, underlined heavily. Yeah.
He was underlining, reading. I mean, he's read it all in an afternoon, and I'm sitting there probably high or something, but or doing whatever I'm doing. He's writing all this stuff.
You had tuned in and dropped out at the time.
That's his
I had dropped out. So he's writing all this stuff, and then I'm thinking he's going to say, oh my God, this is the next great thing. And he finishes the book and he goes, blah, and he throws it across the room. He breaks the binding. I'm like, what? And he goes, first thing, only 2% of the names in the index are women. What's with that?
Good for you.
And that's early, right? Yeah. To say that in 92. Right, and then he says, second, he goes, these guys, their mothers were unable to anticipate their every need. And now what they want to do is recreate. They want to recreate the womb with technology and have robots and algorithms anticipate what they need before they know what they want and bring it to them.
Because
they're afraid of women and they're afraid of people. And they're going to build these bubbles and leave us all behind. I was like, damn, where'd we go? Right now we went. He ended up being right. And the kind of the Peter Thiel 0 to 1 or Mark Zuckerberg going meta or everybody doing a derivative of a derivative of a derivative is that escapism. And that's what I'm writing about in the book, really. It's not just billionaires running to bunkers, but the kind of the escapist urge underlying so much of digital technology, because digital is a map. It's a symbol system. It's one level removed from on the ground reality, which is why it's so tempting to use it to get away from all that scary stuff like nature and women and relationship and humans.
So when you're talking about escape fantasies of the tech billionaires, it's not just to recondition Minuteman silos waiting for the final days that, by the way, which you point out they brought on.
Yeah. I mean, there is that. Just on the most rudimentary level, what I'm really talking about is that these guys want to kind of earn enough money to insulate themselves from the reality they're creating by earning money in that way.
Right.
Right. It's like, how can I build a car that goes fast enough to escape from my own exhaust? And that's the justification that the kind of the insulation calculation that the Epson printer executive makes when he decides, well, we're going to brick these printers after 5,000 pages and make people throw them in a toxic waste dump. I know I'm destroying the world, but my margin's good enough that I'm going to be able to get on a mountain somewhere away from the climate change. You know, so that's sort of the initial premise. But where I go is to is not just the escape plans of these billionaires like Thiel who want to go to New Zealand, or Bezos who wants to get off the planet in the ultimate fantasy of white flight, right? It's not just that. It's
ride your penis rocket to somewhere where there are no underclasses.
I know. Did you see Stephanie Ruhle? I used to love her. I guess I still do. Stephanie Ruhle on MSNBC, when he landed, she's like, oh my God, Jeff, what you did. And I'm like, what are we celebrating here? We're celebrating something. We did that 60
rich guys
years
playing
ago.
With their rich toys.
Exactly. That one person can now do what we could do collectively 60 years ago, yes. Right? Who's winning the space
race?
My
point exactly.
Him?
Yes, they're not astronauts. Yeah. They're just flying their way to their little penis rockets to incel land.
Yeah.
You call it the mindset, this Silicon Valley mindset.
Yeah. So for our audience, Douglas, tell the story of that you told in the excerpt that's been printed. Of the meeting.
Like you guys, I get anyone who writes about tech is considered a futurist, right? I'm really just a presentist, but if people aren't watching, they have no idea what's going on. So, they're just late. So I get called to do these talks, sometimes high paid ones, which then gets me out of my bunker, my own bunker here, my intellectual social bunker.
I might add is well equipped with comic books. Very important. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you can see the...
The audience has picked up on that immediately. You're a graphic novelist as well, so... But we'll talk.
Those are my comic
books,
actually.
Those are yours. Yeah. We'll save that for later.
All right. I'll bring them out. We can read them together.
That would be fun.
But I mean, I try not to do these talks, come talk about the digital future for this group of business people. But, they're paying good money and money talks, and so do I. So I got on a plane, business class, warm nuts, the whole thing, and go out to the, they have warm, you've flown business class and warm nuts. I'm still amazed. Who thought of that?
How can we make nuts? A little extra special because the people
New
back
York
there,
City.
They're eating them out
New
of foil
York City
packets.
Thought of it. Right. So, every fifth corner, there's warm nuts, it's warm nuts with candy.
This is not like the candied peanuts you get for $1.50 wrapped in paper in New York City.
That's the thing. It is, nice, but they make it feel
ceramic
special.
Ceramic bowl, recently warmed.
Right, an almond, a couple of cashews, and
a couple of cashews in there. Yeah.
No peanuts, never peanuts.
Yeah,
no, those are cheap. So anyway, and they're legumes. They're not real nuts. Apparently, it's a whole thing. Did you know that?
Yes.
Or not? I don't know. Someone told me they're not nuts.
They're not nuts.
It's very confusing.
They're legumes.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you're on your way in this business class.
I go there.
Yes.
Yeah. I go out there way out into the desert, like driving 3 hours after I get out of the airport. I'm thinking, what the heck? Who's going to – what rich people are going to go this far? And just as I get to the resort, I see these G5 airplanes landing on this private airstrip thing. I'm like, oh, my God, what have I gotten myself into? So the next morning, they come in a golf cart and bring me out to this, like, little pavilion in my green room, like, trying to practice, you know, my best Marxism for it to throw at these guys. And – they bring the five guys into the green room, right? They don't even mic me up. They don't take me anywhere. It's just five men. Two or three of them actually were verified billionaires. Right? And they sit there and they start peppering me with all these questions about the digital future, like, you know, Bitcoin or Ethereum, virtual reality or augmented reality. I'm like, don't come to me. I said Betamax over VHS, right? I'm not the guy to ask if you want to place your bet. But then finally they got to the question, you know, Alaska or New Zealand. And the whole rest of the hour was spent on questions I asked them this. They started to talk about their bunkers, you know, where they're putting them and whether they're going to protect them from the event.
Oh,
and the event for them is the pandemic, the global warming, the climate crisis, the social unrest, the economic turnaround. Exactly. A nuclear disaster, nano, you know, AI, whatever it
is. Goo.
You know, there you go, Grey Goo. And will it protect them? And then they started talking about how they've got Navy SEALs, you know, to come as to guard them from the likes of us, because we don't have these bunkers. And I remember, all of them talked about Navy SEALs. None of them talked about Army Rangers. You know, if I was going to have a bunker, I'd go with Army Rangers.
Why? Because they're land-based. Yeah.
You
know,
thank you.
Just...
Oh, but completely with the rising tides, I guess, yeah.
Completely parenthetically.
Yeah.
I don't think any humans with guns are a good idea, because as they're quickly going to learn that the guys in the bunker have all the resources. Screw this. We're going in, and they've got the guns. What makes you
exactly
think the Rangers or the SEALs are going to be any less dangerous to you? Which is why, by the way, and it's one of our stories today, the Israelis have figured out how to do autonomous gun turrets shooting at Palestinians.
There you go.
This is what we've needed all along, was AI protection.
It's 1917 and the Tsar.
Yeah. Because honestly, if you're going to protect yourself from the end times in a bunker, you can't let your guards be humans. You need AI to do it.
Exactly. And that's what I hit them with. I gave them basically, you know,
a roadmap.
No.
Thanks, Douglas.
No. I said exactly what you said. I said, why do you think these Navy SEALs are going to protect you once your money is worthless?
Yeah.
If the world is over, if you got Bitcoin, what are you paying them with?
Yeah.
And there's like one guy opens his little, you know, moleskin. He's like, figure out how to. Great. This is a billionaire, right? What am I sitting here with $300,000 or whatever in my retirement account that they say I can't retire on? You know, what is this? So. And then we spend the rest of the hour on that single question. It's like, well, you know, what if we had, you know, implants that sort of decide where people can go, but then we could use them to shock people or prevent them?
Oh,
or what if
Lord.
I'm the only guy who knows the combination on the safe for the food? Or what if we bring in their families? And I'm like, and finally I say, well, look, the way to make sure these guards don't kill you in the apocalypse is, why don't you try to be nice to them now? And I ended it. I said to them, why don't you, go find your head of security and pay for his daughter's bat mitzvah.
There
today.
You go. There you go.
It'll be hard for him to shoot you between the eyes
there
later.
You go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did that then lead to the book? What was the process there?
Well, I mean, I left that thing in a state of shock, right? And a little upset, actually, that that the wealthiest and most powerful people I had ever been in a room with feel utterly helpless to affect the future. The best they can do is, you know, wait for the inevitable event and just hang on for dear life and leave us all behind, right? And continue doing the worst possible things to us in order to earn enough money to insulate themselves from us when the bad stuff happened. And I start tripping out on like Thomas Jefferson and the dumbwaiter and the history of technologies that look like they were there to help people do things like, oh, that's so his enslaved servants won't have to trudge up the steps with all the food. It's like, no, you look at the Monticello, look at the tunnels the enslaved people had to walk through, and they had to walk up like four flights of stairs till they get to the dumbwaiter, which is one flight below the dining room, right? And then you bring it up and it opens up like a replicator on Star Trek. But what they're really doing, they're not trying to save the enslaved people labor. They're trying to save themselves having to witness the enslaved person, right? The technology doesn't replace the labor in that case. It just distances the wealthy from the labor, right? Amazon automatic t-shirts. You still got people, picking the cotton and getting the rare earth metals for the robots that are making, or 3D printing your t-shirt. So there was that. And I ended up writing an article on Medium about this, of what happened, my encounter with these billionaires and this technological insulation equation, I was calling it. And I got this flurry of emails, not so much from people who are upset as from the people who sell survival equipment to the billionaires. Like three different people with bunkers, a guy who's got farms that people can invest in. It's like, introduce me. I've got the product. And I'm like, or people who wanted bunker expertise from me. Like more billionaires are like, oh, can you come talk to me about my bunker?
You've become the bunker man.
I know. Wow. I'm like, I don't know anything about bunkers. I'm an anarcho-syndicalist media theorist. I don't know. I'm
gonna don't be you the want first one now, Douglas? Don't you kind of secretly want your own bunker now?
I got 5 gallons of Poland Spring in the basement.
That's all you need, man. You're sick.
I am ready for it. And a box of Band-Aids. I mean, I'm good.
You raise an interesting point, though. And it's the subtitle of the book, Survival of the Richest, your new book, is the fantasies, escape fantasies of the tech billionaires. Really, that just follows along with Monticello and Jefferson. It really is about kind of escaping what they've created mentally as much as it is physically. Is that right, you think?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. They want to run. I mean, and when I decided to write the book was actually during COVID, and I felt a bit of the prepper isolationist billionaire in myself. I looked at some neighbors who were wealthy enough to get private tutors for their kids, and they had this like little makeshift school in their backyard. I mean, I was, and rather than feeling guilty about my Amazon Prime and Fresh Direct account, now I'm like, oh, thank God I got Amazon Prime, right? I could just stay home. I'll get one of those little video doorbells and just sit there, wait till the guy comes, drops it off, wait like, a couple of hours, go out with my bleach, right? And wipe down my stuff and bring it inside. And maybe in addition to my Netflix, now I'm going to get Disney for the kid. And I've always wanted Criterion to see what's on there, HBO Max. I mean, I started stacking up the cable services, got the barbecue going in the back. It's like I became like a little bunker person.
A mini bunker man.
Yeah.
A mini bunker person. So I saw it sort of in all of us. Our response to crisis was very very individual, very non-team player.
But essentially hide your head in the sand.
Yeah. And that's when I decided I got to write this thing. And then when I started to write it, I realized that this is not a new thing. That if you trace all the way back, I really looked at there's two main lines that lead to this mindset. The first one was, empirical science and technology. If you look at Francis Bacon, who's considered the father of empirical science, when he was arguing for the logic of science, he said, science will let us take nature by the hair, hold her down, and submit her to our will.
Wow.
Like, whoa. All right. So what is science for? Nature is this wild woman. Ah! right? This scary wild woman, gonna just take her by the forelock, hold her down. And so it's a domination fantasy that science will let us dominate nature. It's not gonna surprise us anymore. You know, and that's a little weird. And then you've got capitalism, you know, and colonialism, which you all know about. And you look at a guy like Hobbes, right? The great philosopher they teach us in high school. When he was talking to the British East India Trading Company, you know what he's saying? Go to the New World. You don't have to treat those Native Americans like people at all, right? They're just part of the landscape. They're like tigers and trees and shrubs. You can, don't worry, just kill them, right? And so you have capitalism that has this kind of colonial ethos as well, that any harm you're doing is an externality, right? Your iPhone, you know, your everything about your iPhone is just here, right? Don't worry about where it came from, the people in China jumping out of buildings or whatever with the nets. Well, they got nets now, it'll be fine. But there's nets. Or don't worry about what happens when, you know, he comes out with iPhone 15, so you're going to throw out your iPhone 13 and get a 14 or whatever. You know, don't worry about the toxic waste dump either. That's that externalization of harm from you know, from a capitalist perspective is kind of the same thing. And when they come together with digital kids who've been, and I call them kids, these, you know, the young billionaires who've been, you know, plucked from college at freshman year before they've had a chance to take economics or ethics or anthropology or sociology or anything, and they transfer parental authority onto a Peter Thiel who has them pivot their business from social good to social extraction, you get the mindset, and you get these people, as I'm sure they've been on your show, who are like making and selling products that they won't let their own kids use, right? Their kids are going to Rudolf Steiner schools. They got a goat share up in Topanga somewhere, you know, while they're, you know, selling God knows what to you and me.
No, mostly we have anarcho-syndicalists on, like you, frankly.
Oh, good.
Because, I'm being a little facetious, but it's not really. I would far prefer to talk to people like you and Cory Doctorow, and on and on and on, and Timothy Leary, if he were still with us, than Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates. So it's a kind of almost this Hobbesian, we've got to dominate, that is driving our entire economy and our entire society. The people who are dominated are the ones who complain, but those who are dominating or hope to be dominating love it. How do you change their mind? I mean, they're winning.
They are winning.
That's the essence of the internet as a threat.
Yeah,
is because the dominated can now be heard, and so that to my mind, that's the reformation. And what we see happening on January 6th is the counter reformation. Is that we're going to hold back?
That's
the
a very interesting point. Yeah, we gave these weaklings a voice. What a mistake we made. Let's quickly yank that back.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at, you know, movies like Social Dilemma, when you see all the millionaire tech bros going, oh, maybe we made a mistake here. It's like, you didn't read your Postman. You didn't read Jerry Turkle. You didn't read anybody. It was like, we've been telling you for 20 years, you've been making a mistake. Oh, I woke up and I realized I'm going to now make everything
cash
better.
Those checks. That's all they
But when did they wake up? It was not because people were in pain. They woke up because Donald Trump was elected and they got scared.
Right.
Is why they, you know, it's like, uh-oh. Yeah, it was a little late, buddy, you know?
Government has always been from the very beginning, from monarchies now to capitalism to democracies, about preserving the social order. And who benefits from the social order? The people on top. Keeping poor people and black people hating each other so that they don't pair up, die, you know, combine to take over. That's from time immemorial. You're proposing to overthrow the single dominant way of life in this society.
I think that actually a healthy society has a balance of government and commerce. You know, I feel like business or corporations and government kind of balance each other out like fungus and bacteria in your body. You get rid of one and the other one runs rampant. And that's what we did, what we foolishly did. I remember, you know, 1995 or 6, John Barlow wrote the Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace. You know, Grateful Dead lyricist. We didn't realize he was also Dick Cheney's roommate in college, right?
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. Cool, I would ask you about that. Okay.
Full libertarian. Interesting dude. I mean, wonderful guy. He writes this thing and he says, you know, in the beginning, governments of the where, you know, governments of the world, beware. We are here. We don't need you. We're going to make our own thing. We don't need your damn rules. And all of us are like, yay, John, yay, yay, free internet. We don't need government. And the reason we were like that is because government, other than making the internet, cast itself as the enemy of the internet. Remember, it was a Operation Sun Devil. They're going and raiding like 14-year-old kids for hacking into a shopping mall and like, put your hands behind your back, machine guns, you know, put your sister on there, get down. You know, it's like, my God, what are they doing? And Tipper Gore with the Computer Decency Act. It's like everything.
Well, it's worse now. It's worse now. The legislation that's coming out in the U.S. and the U.K., you know, illegal but harmful content, things that are harmful, the paternalism of and the protectionism of the formerly powered is getting worse, I think.
Right. Right. They don't know how to play with this. They don't know how to promote. They don't know how to promote civics online, which would be their strength. They just know how to repress stuff that they're scared of. Right. And so then they make themselves the enemy. And then we're more open to Facebook and whoever else wants to dominate the space.
But it is. So it's been this way since time immemorial. I don't know. Part of the problem is, of course, maybe we're starting to see. I always gain hope when I see what's going on, for instance, in Iran with women revolting and burning their habibs. Occasionally you'll see these outbursts. What's going on in Russia
after someone? After someone gets beaten to death. Right.
After it affects people's
lives. And I always am hopeful that maybe someday the people can rise up and try to form a new way of thinking, but it never happens.
That's why Reformation, Counter-Reformation, Leo. I think that, you know,
but the reason it never works is because the power is inherently in the hands of the dominant.
Well, it is a Hobbesian world. Or it takes a long time to work to some extent, right? After Luther came all kinds of crazy peasant revolts. And Luther turned against him because he said, what the hell have I unleashed here?
Yeah, because ultimately, no one wants uncertainty. No one wants upheaval. We all just want to lead our lives. And so we end up letting these guys run it.
Yeah, but I feel like the most successful people at evading domination usually don't take the dominators on head to head, but create an alternative system.
There you go. Yes,
that only they understand. So, I mean, it's easiest to see in the history of Black Americans, right? The Black Americans were not allowed to participate in the regular economy. So in their towns, they created their own circular economies. And it turned out when you're disconnected from the giant sucking sound of corporate America, you end up having a circular economy and people were investing in one another and creating mutual aid. And they did better than their white counterparts. So their white counterparts went and attacked them and killed them because how could you be doing better than us if you've been cut off from the economy? It's precisely because of it.
Tulsa, you and say? Tulsa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Perfect example.
Exactly. Because they were using the what would now be considered in white culture state of the art, you know, platform cooperatives and new neo alternative currencies and you know, it's like, yeah, they were doing it since like 1810. Thank you very much. And then I'm even thinking about like augmented reality. People were asking me, I was just on a show where they said, what is the most creative use you've seen of augmented reality? And
that's
Yeah, I said the Underground Railroad.
Oh, wow.
They put symbols on houses so you would know this is a safe area, this one has a dog, this one's dangerous.
Or the hobo markings,
The hobo markings on trains, exactly. Yeah. That's augmented reality. And if we use that as our model,
I love it.
Then the technology becomes liberative rather than dominating.
I think there's always been, and you're part of it, but a kind of an underclass, an under subculture of artistic, creative people who have wanted to see it another way. Who was it? I think it was Joseph Campbell said, if you don't like the culture, make one of your own. If you don't like the dominant culture, make one of your own. We've always had subcultures, but they've always been kind of little ferments that bubble and then disappear in the larger dough.
Well, it's also
capitalism.
About publics and counterpublics. The Habermas argument that we end up with one public sphere and one public is a dominant way of looking at the world. Everyone will be like me or what I want the world to be, as opposed to realizing that the world has always been made up of competing publics and the communities.
Yeah, but there's
we're
always
we're
been,
all into various.
But it's competing publics, but the game is rigged. We know who's going to win in the long run, right?
Well, no. In the long run, Luther did pretty well.
Well, it's also, what do you define? How do you define winning? You know, and that kind of goes back to my billionaires. They define winning in a finite game, right? Winning means rising above everybody else.
Right.
Winning. I mean, even God bless him. Even my dad used to tell me, and it was without any evil, I think. He was raised in the tenements of the Lower East Side, what he called the slums. You know, they all nine of them in a tenement. There was a bucket they used as a bathtub in the kitchen. It was all hard. And he goes, I worked hard.
Yeah.
I went to school. I made money to get out of that neighborhood so I could raise you somewhere better. So that's the way we think about it. Lifting ourselves up and out is winning. But what about when the world is your bad neighborhood, right? You can't. Bezos. Bezos and said Musk is going, and there's the Virgin guy over there.
So then you have these, a lot of fiction authors have talked about it, like William Gibson, these kind of little mini cyberpunk, you were a cyberpunk, subcultures that somehow thrive and survive below the surface. Is that the future you want? Or do you want to become dominant? And then just like, because with all due respect, Luther survived by Protestantism survived, but by becoming the dominant and suppressive mechanism in many countries,
well,
including
power
our
corrupts.
Own, right?
Yeah.
So, is it the power that corrupts, or is it human nature that as soon as you get in charge?
What Douglas is really investigating, right? What's the chicken and egg there? Is it the realization that you have the power, or is it the money and then you want to protect it? You get the money so you can protect the power, or you get the power so you can protect the money?
I always come to the conclusion that it's humans are the problem. What do you think, Douglas?
Oh, humans are the problem and technology is the solution. We can just
that's
program
not
them
it
better. I'm doing a kind of a disciplined thought experiment, if you will, where I'm refusing to imagine a future and what I want in the future. And I'm trying to discipline myself to create that future through appropriate action in the present.
Good. I'm with you. How do we do it? Let's do it. Let's go. I agree 100%. I want to live in your future.
Well, be it right now.
You've got to build it.
Right? It's just engender the future you want in this second. So we're doing it right now, right? You're giving me time. I'm giving, and then we step away. How are you treating that person? How are you treating and then it's in the moment to moment decisions that you make. If you make them differently, like instead of, you got to hang a picture, right? Oh, shoot. So I'm going to go to Home Depot and get a minimum viable product drill, right? Which is made by some enslaved person somewhere, and it's going to work for 3 weeks, and I'm going to throw it out there, but it's going to get the picture up. Or who on my block has a good drill, right? Maybe we should have one good drill on our block, and everybody borrows the drill from Joe.
There's a good Marxist for you.
One lawnmower. Well, is that Marxism? I mean,
I like it.
Well, the problem with it is that what people will say is, well, yeah, but if everybody's sharing all their tools like that, what happens to the people working at the tool company? What happens to the GDP, right? So what we actually have to do is stop feeling responsible for these systems that we've put in place. And I want to talk to the tech bros and help them understand, dudes, you are accepting the operating system of startup venture capitalism as a God-given circumstance of nature. You are in a gamified world. You think, you know, you're the one who's always saying that we might be in a simulation. Dudes, you're in a simulation right now of how your company has to work. If you don't take money in that way and don't sign that kind of contract, you're not going to need 1,000x returns, and you're going to get to do the business that you want. Are you satisfied with 10 or 20 million to take home instead of a billion? If you are, you could have a lot more fun at this. So it's engendering a spirit of just sharing and fun, what we would call an infinite game, rather than selling your business to the mob or the stock market, you know, where they're going to just run money through it. What if you start a business that you actually want to run and keep and enjoy?
I think almost everybody, maybe I'm giving people too much credit, have in the back of their minds, as they're watching this, kind of endless growth, endless progress, the thought that, you know, it's it might be possible to do zero growth to create a sustainable economy where everybody lives comfortably, but nobody gets rich. You hear people say no more billionaires. I think in the back of our minds, we all think that would be kind of right. That would be the proper way to be, the proper way to do things. And then we go, nah. We go back out and we say, go, I need a raise, boss.
We go nah because
the,
we
the
don't.
There's aspect of people wanting more because they work more, so they're going to feel entitled. You know, there's always that entitlement.
Well, I think it's the other way around. I think they work more because they want more, right? Yeah. Go ahead.
It's also they don't feel safe. If you don't feel safe,
that's right.
If you don't feel like your neighbors are going to take care of you when you're old, then you need to have 2 or 3 million, whatever they say you need to have now to retire. Friggin' species is there on the planet that collects
so many
nuts?
Why are Denmark and Finland happy? Because they have a safety net.
Right. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, because we can't in this country, it doesn't have to be a centrally organized social safety net. I mean, what if Social Security were really just social security?
We've seen people act that way. When there's a disaster, we do that. We do come together.
The first week.
Yeah, but that's the problem. We also only do it the disaster. An individual has a disaster in their lives, we don't care. Right. What we care about is scale. Mm-hmm. What we care about is Ian hitting the whole state.
Let's hit the reset button.
Well, I love your idea.
Yeah, let's hit the reset button.
Well, you don't do a control alt delete either. I mean, you take a tech bro, right, and send him to Burning Man and give him some ayahuasca. They have this realization, right? Oh, the planet is crying out to me. It's sick. It's out of the economy.
I'm going to sit for 14 hours in my car burning
carbon. Well, they get on the G5. They get on the G5 back to San Jose. And while they're on the plane, they come up with a software stack.
Exactly.
That's fix civilization. Let's call it game B, right?
Yeah.
Or plan B, whatever we want. And this is it. It's got education. I did the education stack. I did the environmental stack. I did the farming stack, the architectural stack, the social stack, the sex stack, the religion stack. And then, or we'll do it out on the ocean, right? If you like my nation, you move up your little raft and attach it and you're part of my nation. The minute I do something wrong, you just detach and go to the nation you like better, right? Zero friction, right? Zero exit cost to move from, it's just like shopping for the civilization of your choice, right? And it's these it's that turnkey solution that we are with a great reset, as they call it. The control alt delete mindset is part of the tech bro thing. It doesn't happen. The theory of change is the actual change. That's why I'm saying I'm trying to be disciplined and be in the moment. It's the how we do it matters more than whatever it is that we think we're doing.
Love it.
And the responsibility and agency we have, that was the part of our course, was to try to convince the students that they had the agency and responsibility to build the future of the internet. Do they have a power alone? No. Do they have to grab it? Yes. But their actions now set the norms for the future. Their actions now set the demand in the marketplace. They have to take responsibility for that, and with the acknowledgement that nobody ever has enough power.
It may be that we do have, honestly, I think that this has gone on for so long. I mean, remember communes? Everybody thought this is going to be the future. Then there was co-living. Like, we're just going to do it, and it's going to be better. And it always seems to fall apart. And I think part of the problem is humans.
People.
Well, certain humans.
People are screwed up. So,
right.
But
sexually
maybe
frustrated dudes come in and abuse the situation and get
happens.
Laid.
Yeah. All it takes is one person who says, you know what, with all these people being passive, I could be dominant and run the whole thing, and it's over. So inevitably that guy or gal comes along.
That's right. It's the Seven Samurai thing. You know, the nice people in the town. It's like, you know, the seven. I always thought about when I watched that movie, you know, how they have to go get Seven Samurai to protect them from the bad guys. It's like, why can't the samurai come and just teach the whole town kung fu? Right. So they don't need.
You can do this. But we've seen it again and again. But maybe maybe there is a little gap of a possibility here, because we are headed towards a global crisis that we are going to have to cooperate to solve. That it cannot be solved by any one nation, any one group.
That's everything is negotiating norms, negotiating our priorities. The issue now is that there are more people at the table than there were before. More people who've always had a voice, but suddenly can make themselves heard. And again, that's what the old white structure resents and would rather burn down the fields than share them with those who follow. But what is rejected as cancel culture or woke or any of those code words now is people who didn't have the power before tried to take it. And that's a process of negotiation in society. That's what how we should use these tools is not to technological ends, but to the human ends.
It is interesting that your book is about how these tech billionaires are reacting to this existential climate crisis by not fixing it, by buying an island, right?
Yeah. I mean, they'd be happy to fix it. They'll try something, you know, take a little money, shoot some sulfur into the sky, you know, yeah. or throw some iron filings in the ocean. You know, there's the nice tech bro billionaires like Bill Gates. He's like, well, I'll just buy up all the farmland in America and I'll administrate it better than they can themselves. You know, there's those ones. But again, they generally look at these one size fits all solutions, even the ones that want to do it. I mean, God bless them, right? You know, Singularity University and the X Prize. And it's like, we'll give $100 million to the best solution as long as it scales globally, right? And it's like, no, maybe it, rather than one solution that scales globally, it's like 100,000 solutions that scale locally and that we can model off each other because nature is distributed,
It is interesting. The labor movements are suddenly becoming more and more strong for a long time. You know, it was cardinal orthodoxy that, oh, unions are bad. And I think that's changed dramatically. In fact, I just saw a poll that some vast majority of Americans think unions are a good thing. And you're seeing it happen to Amazon and Starbucks, as fight though they may, Apple. So maybe this is maybe this utopia is possible, or is this just another Luther moment?
You don't worry about utopia. You don't.
There's no utopia.
Don't you have to have a goal? Don't you have to have a thing that you're hoping to achieve? No, just
improvement.
I mean, incremental improvement. Yeah, you could say. Yeah, we're leaning toward justice, right? Yeah, justice. For more people.
The arc of justice.
Right? Yeah. But we need to engender compassion for one another. I mean, I got it in the book. You put a billionaire in a MRI machine and show them a picture of a starving baby, and the part of their brain that's supposed to light up doesn't light up.
Really?
Billionaires, actually, yes. It's as if they've had brain trauma.
Because they're sociopaths.
Their frontal lobes.
They're sociopaths.
Yes, but they become sociopaths. They're not that way before the billions. It's because in order to do the things you need to do.
You have to become one. Yeah.
Right. You've got to.
You've got to bury your conscience if you're going to become that rich. Because in your heart of hearts, you know you're doing it based on the subjugation of your fellow man.
Yes. But here we are living on the platforms built by people with that sensibility, right? So we too learn how to swipe left on the stories we don't want to see until the algorithm learns, oh, just don't show Doug that anymore. La, 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 right? It doesn't exist.
Are you calling for, if you were to issue a manifesto, if you were to outdo John Perry Barlow, this is it? This is it?
No, I guess the book before this, Team Human, was my manifesto.
Yeah.
You know, and that was basically arguing anything that brings us together is our friend. Anything that isolates us is not. And that we have to remember that in a quantized universe, in a digital universe, an algorithmic universe, everything between the one and the zero is noise. All the soft, squishy stuff that makes humans human, our ability to maintain ambiguity over time, to sustain paradox, is stuff that our artificial intelligences and algorithms can't understand. And we are so enamored of sort of auto-tuning our reality to conform to this digital substrate that we are shaving off what makes humans truly human. And that's
what I want us to reclaim. Right? So polling does that. Polling puts you into binary buckets. Political systems do that. Markets do that. Here's the product. Take it or leave it. We have the opportunity. One thing I try to say in the book, well, I'll plug pretty soon, is that we have the chance to do more than measure now. We have the chance to listen. And listening is not easy. Listening brings nuance. Listening brings conflict and confusion. But that's where we have to try to get to, because when we reduce people to a binary, we lose their humanity.
Yeah. I remember there was a time, you were alive for this, Jeff. There was and you were too, Leo.
Grandpa.
There was a time, remember in the 80s, when someone would go into computing, like get into it as a thing, their parents would be worried about them. Right? Like, oh, no. Mm-hmm. You could have been a doctor or a lawyer, and now you're gonna play video games and Dungeons and Dragons and play with these machines. Why are you throwing your career, your whole thing? And those were the good old days, right? Because it was just passion. It was connection, and it was a choose your own adventure hypertext. How does this world work? What is this fractal that I'm in, and what's my relationship to the whole? It was a trippy, wonderful, crazy thing. And I do believe that spirit is being retrieved, because this other thing has reached its limit. Even the tech bros who built it know that it sucks.
Right, right. And I don't think it comes any more from the technology. Clay Shirky, the technology gets interesting when it gets boring. I think that the what's interesting now is what gets done with it. The scary stat to me, I don't know if you know this, Douglas, I just saw this a couple weeks ago, is that within about a year, American colleges and universities will graduate more computer science degrees than all the humanities combined.
In the 80s or the 70s, when I was in school, it was pre-med and pre-law. Kids go to school to study the thing they're going to make the most money at. So it makes perfect sense. They'd all want to be computer scientists.
Well, we then mischaracterize school.
You and I think school's has a different purpose than most of the people who are spending $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year.
Yep.
They expect a return on their investment.
Well, yeah, but why should corporations be entitled to outsource their employee training to my education loan? Right? My education loan is for me. You want to train your employees? You just do that on your dime,
You're talking like a history major, an English major. You humanities types, you got no clue.
What was your major? Was it theater? What was your major?
Yeah, English and theater. I was pre-med. I accomplished my parents. They weren't going to pay for Princeton.
That was for mom and dad. That was for mom and dad.
I finished pre-med. I was a high A-minus average, enough to get into a good thing, and then went to drugs and did theater. Yeah.
Thank God for drugs. That's all I can say.
Well,
they open your mind. The billionaires that I know that take the ayahuasca sometimes have a different experience than you and I.
I was so shocked. I know. I thought, right? Remember, whenever you take acid in college, you're like, all we got to do is get the awful people to take this, and they'll be. You give a tech bro acid, they think they're God.
Yes.
They think they're God.
They meet the machine elves who are running the things behind the scenes, and they say, hey, let's make a deal. And it's a completely different experience.
Yeah. Well, it's what Leary said. It's set and setting. It's
set and setting.
Determine the quality of your trip. You know, and that's the same set and setting. It determines the quality of the internet too. You know, we started this internet with a set and setting of creativity, connection, and sharing, right? It was all shareware. Now, for 20, 30 years, we've been living on a psychedelic substrate of the internet with a set and setting of surveillance, control, and domination. So that's why we're all having a bad trip.
Yes.
Right? But we can, as Jeff might say, we can reset that trip, right? By reestablishing a different set and setting around this stuff. And that's really what our course was about. What if you were in charge? What is the set and setting? What is the mindset that you want to bring to this technology? What is the setting in which you want to build this technology? And you may get some very different results than what we've seen so far.
There are people doing that. I do see people doing that. And it's always very encouraging to me as an old hippie. But sometimes I think we're fighting an upstream uphill battle.
Yeah, people but like so little salmon.
Days, little though. Salmon. Yeah. Yeah, the salmon make it. Right? Some of them.
Exactly. At least they used to.
Yeah. The bears don't get you first. I love it. The book, brand new. It's out now. You can read it, listen to it. Soon, I'm sure it'll be a podcast. Underline it. Throw it against the wall. Break the spine. Survival of the Richest, published by W.W. Norton. Escape Fantasies, of the Tech Billionaires. And, you know, I'll put in a plug for Team Human, because that also is a book people should absolutely read, because this is the plan. This is this is what we need to do to get to that future.
How many books is it now, Douglas?
Like 20. Wow. I think this was the 20th. Oh, yeah,
that's great.
Jeez. But I'm done. I'm going back to theater, actually. I want to do a play about tech bros who go to South America to do ayahuasca.
I can't wait. I do think ultimately art is our final hope, that it has to.
Yes.
That for some reason, art seems to succeed and go forward in a way that all of this intellectualizing, book writing, podcasting doesn't seem to take. But art can do it. And whether it's film, theater, paintings, photography, or music.
Dali, right.
Dali did it.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah.
Now available.
No, I mean,
art can do it. Although, it's funny that you told this anecdote about doing Three Penny Opera with expensive seats. I went to see Roger Waters, who's also a utopianist and wants the world to be a better place. And the seats were $242. And I'm thinking, you know, yeah, and this happens again and again. You go see these people with these utopian dreams. But once you pay the price to sit in the seat, it's a little bit more
Roger
capitalistic.
Roger Waters still got to eat.
Yeah.
How do we support the creativity?
Got to support the arts. Well, maybe smaller scale, perhaps. You know,
I think he'll be okay with a lower seat price. He's going to somehow make it.
or do a little community theater. Do what you do,
value the Roger Waters you've never heard of.
Exactly.
Value the guy person in the subway. Out there.
Yeah.
And there's 6.5 million creators on Spotify.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Roger Waters in there. And there's some schlubs in there, too. But
no, I agree. Hey, it's been a pleasure, Douglas, to reconnect with you after 22 years.
Dang.
I'll put a link to the Screensavers episode you were on. I'm looking at the Team Human, and the interview you did with Russell Brand is amazing. Highly recommend it. There are a bunch of interviews and talks here that you can see on the page.
Yeah, fun stuff.
All available at Douglas's website. If you go to rushkoff.com, RUSHKOFF.
Well, thank you for letting me be part of this week.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I'm honored. And anytime you just want to kibitz, I'm around.
Well, honestly, we'd love to have you back anytime you want to be around. It's great to have you. So we'll keep in touch. Thank you, Douglas.
We'll dissect the news together.
Yes.
Thanks for what you do.
If you are an anarcho-syndicalist and you like to take hallucinogenic drugs, tomorrow Cory Doctorow will be joining us with a special one-hour triangulation on his new book, Choke Point Capitalism, which I suspect is going to be a similar topic to what Douglas and I were talking about.
He'll be wearing his kilt.
No, maybe not. His co-author, Rebecca Giblin, will also join us. A special triangulation episode tomorrow, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. I think maybe my hippie is showing a little bit. I'm going to have to grow my hair and make it a man.
Wait, one last question. Who here had long hair in those days?
Douglas had long hair. No?
Jufro.
It's okay, sir.
Jufros are the best. I interviewed Timothy Leary about 30 years ago. I think he hit on me, actually, as I remember. Or maybe he was just offering me a hit. I can't remember. But brilliant guy, fascinating guy, and probably misunderstood and misrepresented in today's culture. So it's great to reconnect with him and to know that John Perry Barlow slept with Dick Cheney. Wow, that was an eye-opener.
Who knew?
We never asked him in all these years. Mm. Thank you very much, Douglas.
Thank it's you, great my to friend. Have you.
Take care.
Nice to meet you.
Take care. Yeah. Okay, bye. Good to meet you.
Our triangulation tomorrow is brought to you with the gentle consideration of our great Club Twit members. We really appreciate your Club Twit membership. This show, for instance, going out ad-free to all the Club Twit members, all of our shows ad-free. All you have to do is pay $7 a month. That helps us defray the costs of the production, and it lets us take the ads out and the tracking out so we can just deliver it directly to you. I think that's the best way, if you ask me. It's the way I always wanted to do TWIT. We'd like to get back to that. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit to sign up. $7 a month. There's a yearly plan. There's an enterprise plan. You also get access to the Club TWIT Discord, which is a wonderful place to hang with people, to have great conversations, not just in the shows, but during, after, you know, in between hours. There's, we talk about all kinds of things. In fact, I'm going to have to start. We have a crypto DeFi NFT section. I'm going to have to start a anarcho-syndicalist section as well. Sports, TikTok corner, travel, and a whole lot more.
The TikTok corner that Mr. Jarvis is never in. Come on,
he never stops by. Well, TikTok corner is all the best.
Well, TikTok's yesterday. We got to find out what's
new. I have to call him out.
Ant has a little bit of an interest in this. He is our community manager. Puts together our great Club TWIT events. We've got Stacy's book club coming up later this month. There's still time to read the book. Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, and join the book club. That'll be 9 a.m. Pacific on the 27th. We also have Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott, Hands on Mac with Micah Sargent. These are Club TWIT exclusives. The Untitled Linux Show with Jonathan Bennett, The Giz Fizz with Dick D. Bartolo. So it is a chance for us to create new shows because thanks to the Club TWIT members who sponsor them. And sometimes these shows make it out into the public, like this week in space. We were able to launch, if you will, in Club TWIT. So please help us out. twit.tv/clubtwit. I think it's well worth the $7 a month. I'll see you in the clubhouse. Thanks for joining us. Now, back to the show. We have eliminated the Doug Rushkoff monitor. It's just the
Doug
three of us.
Doug has to cool down a little bit.
I forgot what an energetic fella he is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was awesome.
Isn't he great? He's so inspiring, and I feel the same way about...
Fun to teach with.
Yeah, I bet he is. If you can get a word in edgewise, I would bet there's a lot of...
No! If anybody can, I can. You know, the great thing, so what was great about us as bookmarks and teaching the course is I wrote what would Google do, and he wrote throwing rocks at the Google bus.
Right. Right.
And so you know we could counterpose each other, but we ended up at the same place. We ended up with this idea of trying to convince the students of their agency and responsibility. And I think I've said this on the show before, but what Doug said that I love so much, he said, "Well, Jeff," he said, "we end up at the same place. We just get there differently." He said, you want more good and I want less bad, less evil.
Huh.
Oh, okay.
That's good. I like it. More good, less evil. Yeah. We could do with both. Exactly. Meta has been ordered to pay $175 million, not to a government, not to the FTC, but to another company, Voxer, who created the walkie-talkie messaging app. You might remember. Voxer went to a jury actually in Texas and said, hey, we've got the live streaming patents. Facebook Live and Instagram Live infringe on them. Actually, the story behind Voxer is kind of interesting. Founded by Tom Cadis, who was a U.S. Army veteran who, according to The Verge, wanted to fix the shortcomings he experienced in battlefield communications after his combat unit was ambushed in Kunar province in 2003, he and his team began developing telecommunications solutions in 2006. They invented a technology that allowed the transmission of live voice and video. Although it seems to me we had that before 2006, but
yeah, they invented it.
Yeah, that's what this is. We just on last week's show. We kind of said, aren't we past that, you know, Apple versus Amazon? I invented the button. No, I invented the button stuff. And we're kind of back into it.
Walkie-talkie was launched in 2011. Now, here's maybe a little bit of a smoking gun. According to the court filings, Meta approached Voxer soon after the app's launch, looking to collaborate. And then by a year later, Voxer had disclosed its patent portfolio and proprietary technology to Meta, but as often happens, Microsoft used to do this too. Oh, I guess we can't really reach an agreement to work together. Meta identified Voxer as a competitor, according to Voxer's complaint. Despite having no live video or voice product of its own at the time, they revoked Voxer's access to key components of the platform and then launched Facebook Live 2 years later. So maybe this was a reasonable decision. The jury was unanimous, awarding $174 million to Voxer Meta says it will appeal. I don't know.
I mean, by the way, does Facebook still have Facebook Live?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. That's it? The streaming platform of mass murderers everywhere, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's wow. That's the thing. It's not really
well, I hate to say fired. It, Ant, but it kind of is.
Shots fired. Yeah, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. Among others. I mean, other people use it as well. Currency, been a bad day, bad week, bad month, bad year in the stock market.
Thank you, United Kingdom.
It's been bad in Britain, lately. Too. Yeah. You know what's interesting, though? As the dollar surges, the pound collapses, Bitcoin has gone up 6.5%.
Back up to $20?
Yeah.
What's 20,000. 6% is news. That's how far back everything has been.
Yeah.
Sven Henrik, the founder of Northman Trader, a markets research firm, tweeted, you know, we've reached a unique time in history when Bitcoin suddenly is less volatile than fiat currencies. Oh, that hurts. That's got to hurt. I'm not saying this is the time to invest in Bitcoin, just an observation that Bitcoin is doing well as other currencies seem to be sinking rapidly.
How has Ether done since the merge?
You know, I think it's not been good for – the merge has not been good for ETH, but let me just look and see. Yeah. Actually, no, it's doing all right. Let's look at the one-month trend. It did go down quite a bit September 10th after the merge, but it's stabilized a little bit. We'll see. It's not exactly at its...
Show the 1 year, if you would.
Not exactly at its year high.
Oh, it literally went off the chart there for a while.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think that there's a period of time where people adjust to the idea of proof of stake. And I know. I have high hopes that Ether will survive that merge because... I want other cryptocurrencies to adopt this.
Well, yeah, more than survive. I want them to become a model.
Yeah. Meta also being sued right now. This is a great story. We talked quite a bit about Apple's app tracking transparency. That was the little switch Apple turned on iOS 14.5 that said, hey, do you want to let Facebook track you? Say no.
Switch option. Is that what you're talking about?
Gave you the option, and most people took no. Facebook whined and moaned, said we're going to lose billions of dollars. Actually, I think they said they lost $10 billion last year because of this ATT switch. Carl Bode writing in TechDirt says, advertisers, most notably Facebook, cried like a disappointed toddler at Christmas. But Facebook also, and they even said this in an earnings call, found other ways to get the same information. They're being sued now. Apple security researcher Felix Krauss found Facebook was getting around Apple's system by directing any link a user clicks on in the Facebook app to a new in-app browser window where Facebook was able to inject a code, alter the external websites, and track user behavior online without user consent or awareness. So they figured, you know, as one does, they figured out a way to get around it. Meta is now facing two different class action lawsuits accusing it of violating state and federal privacy laws, including the Federal Wiretap Act. I'm not sure that's really the right law for this, but hey, whatever it takes. It has been called basically a glorified spyware attack. It's one of the reasons I actually don't have the Instagram. I do have the Instagram app. I don't have the Facebook app on my phone. By the way, we talked about it yesterday on MacBreak Weekly, and now I'm regretting it. There is an app that just came out called the OG app. Have you seen this? I know you did, Ant, right? We were talking about this.
No, I haven't seen this one.
Okay, so the idea is it's using Instagram's API to create a better Instagram app by stripping out the ads, stripping out the algorithm. It looks just like the old school Instagram with pictures. Guess what? It is. I mentioned it yesterday. I said, everybody get it before Apple takes it down. It's gone. As of this morning, it's already gone.
Why did Apple take it down? What terms did they break with this?
Instagram complained. Well, yeah, that's the thing. I don't think it, it actually violated any terms. This is a public API that they were using. I knew that it wasn't going to go well after I installed it and then went back to Instagram. The app said, there's been a security breach. Please verify your password. Do the two-factor. We're going to call you. And I thought, oh, this is just punitive. This is just Instagram saying, well, if you're going to use that app, we're going to bug you every single time you load OG. I really, it's an interesting story because I really thought this might be a way of telling Instagram you've taken the wrong route. It was created by Ansh Nanda and Hardik Patil, who had just raised a lot of money for Zepto, which is their shopping cart app that's done quite well. I think they just raised over $100 million in venture funding. And I guess this is a side project. Still in the Android store. Let me just see. Oh, I wonder if I deleted the app after it. Yeah, shoot. Now I won't be able to get it back.
Give it a try on Android.
Yeah, see, give it a try. It's really nice because it looks just like Instagram, except it says OG instead of Insta. And it's just your friends. You know, it's that people you follow feed. There's Reels at the bottom.
I don't see it in the store.
Oh, maybe it's gone. Look for the OG app. That's what it was called in iOS, the OG app.
It's gone.
Oh, well.
If they hadn't gotten rid of the ads.
Not that kind of thing.
I don't think, honestly, it's... But I'm sure that Facebook complained to Apple, but or Insta or Meta, whatever you call them. But
I use Instagram quite regularly. But yeah, I admit I do feel a little icky sometimes, knowing that every time I launch that app, the splash screen says a Meta property or something like that.
That's
where my engagement is.
Don't you? Yeah, I understand that, but you also have to kind of hate the way it looks now and how it feels, and they really prefer video, and it's just not the Instagram I used to know.
The video stuff really, really bugged me. It's not bugging me as much now because the videos are starting to look more like the things that I care to see.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm starting to see more behind the scenes cinema stuff. I'm starting to see more photographers doing their behind the scenes and things like that, not just a bunch of idiots dancing on the screen to some song that somebody else wrote. It's actually being a little bit more effective. Even a couple, I'm seeing people do little quick tutorials, little 30-second tutorials for things. So that's getting better for me.
See, that's not Instagram to me. Do that on TikTok. I mean, that's not Instagram to me. Instagram is photos. It's about photos. Yeah, my friend's photos.
Yeah, I'm not seeing a lot of photos
30-second tutorial videos on Insta. Anyway, it's not Insta anymore. So the OG app has tweeted, yesterday night after we received 10,000 downloads, we're number 50 on the Apple Store. And I will add, after Leo Laporte recommended on MacBreak Weekly and had an average rating of 4.1 stars, Apple took us off the App Store. Users chose OG over Instagram because we listened to them and built what they wanted. Apple, which side do you want to be on? Okay. We got dozens of submissions approved to the App Store in the past 3 months. They requested multiple changes to OG. We complied with all the changes they requested to fit within their guidelines. There are other apps in the top charts that replicates Instagram's user experience, have been there for years. So Apple, I don't know. We don't know. Apple has not made a statement. I'm not sure why they pulled it down. They said, we're working to get relisted on the App Store. Until then, to get an ad-free and customizable Instagram, please download the OG app from the Google Play Store, but maybe not.
Well, shout out to Scooterettes, who just put a link in the IRC.
Oh, you can get it. Okay.
So now I'm doing it from the browser. I just, when I put it in on my phone, it wasn't showing up.
There it is, the OG app from UN1FEED. Now, somebody, I think probably Andy Inoko, pointed out, maybe it was Stephen Robles, that in order to use this, you have to sign in at Instagram. It looks like it's Instagram OAuth. It's not using something provided by OG, but it's going through Instagram to give them permission. And for some reason, Instagram did not block permission. They just made it unpleasant. Maybe worried about antitrust action. I don't know.
Now, I will say the reviews here are 2.8 stars. So yeah. I had to look at that And
oh, now they want a phone number or a Google account to sign in. Glitchy, doesn't load out at the time. Yeah, I think, frankly, Meta's...
It's making a statement more than an app.
Yeah, Meta's throwing a monkey wrench into this.
Yeah.
Well, I have a feeling we haven't heard the end of the OG saga.
Good luck, Tom. There's another way to look at this. It's all a Valentine to Instagram. People are saying, I love the Instagram that was. Why are you messing with it?
Yeah.
They should see that. It's not to plug myself here. But when I was on Moonlighting, Glenn Gordon Caron, the producer, called me and I complained so much about the show not being on and about all the reruns. And he said, thanks for the Valentine.
Yeah.
It means you like it. It means you want it.
Yeah.
And people want the original Instagram. Facebook should have this, Meta should have the sense to see that they've got some real value there and they're pissing it off.
Well, if Douglas Rushkoff were here, yes, I think he would point out that what this is all about is the perceived threat to Instagram and Meta, and more Meta than Instagram, from TikTok. And this is a defensive action against TikTok, which, by the way, Meta does all the time. Instagram added Reels. They were fighting Snapchat for a long time. They had Snapchat
stories,
story style features.
Right. So the strategy, we talked about this show, you talked about it a lot. The strategy should not be to copy what everyone else does and say, I can do that too. Because then you lose your essence.
It'd be nice for them to care more about users than they do about the competition. But I think they're probably not wrong in thinking this is our platform to beat down. They successfully beat down Snapchat. Remember, their goal is not to make Instagram your favorite app. Their goal is to defeat Snapchat. So that they can be the only ad. It's all about ads, right? Ads on Meta. Yeah. And so let's get the competition out of the, knock them down like bowling pins. And TikTok is big ad competition, I would guess, for Facebook right now. Much more problematic than application tracking. Chipotle, get ready, Jeff.
Ugh.
Chipotle is moving the robots into the restaurants. They're also piloting AI that tells the kitchen staff what to cook.
Yeah, this is what this.
This is a tortilla making robot. They've been trying out. It's made by Miso.
It's not a tortilla making robot. It's a frying robot.
I guess I don't know how it works. Let's look at the video. Let's watch the video. Looks complicated. It's called Chippy, made by Miso Robotics.
Make tortilla chips.
Oh, it makes chips. Tortilla chips. Well,
yeah, it fries it. It puts, you know, listen, McDonald's has a thing that they put the French fries in the basket. It goes down. It cooks. It comes back. It's a robot.
That's a robot.
Right? Right? Well, and the same with this claim of AI that drives me completely bananas. Because it's, well, we're going to use patterns that we already know to decide what to do. That's a spreadsheet. It's not AI.
No. It's more complicated than that. By the way, White Castle also has an ARM-based robot called Flippy that flips burgers and flips fries. But you're right. That's not exactly. Well, it is a robot, Jeff. That's a robot.
Just as much as your toaster is.
It's flipping stuff around. I don't know.
Your toaster is taking bread down and cooking it and putting it back up. Wow.
I will tell you, however, that one of the big challenges of becoming a manager at McDonald's is understanding how many hamburgers to make for the big rush that's going to come at noon.
That's true.
It's a hard thing to do.
How many potatoes to wrap at Ponderosa Steakhouse?
Precisely. Yeah. And McDonald's, when I was there in 1973, 50 years ago, oh my God.
Oh God, Leo. God.
Even then, if you made too much, you didn't throw it out. You put it in a special white hamper that was then counted at the end of every day.
Oh, yeah.
Your stats, because they want to know how much waste you're coming up with.
Well, they also want to know that you're not giving food away for free.
That's right.
We had to count at Ponderosa. We had little sour cream cups. You know, we're going to charge you for the sour cream for your potato, and you got to buy about 10 of them to get enough. We had to count the cups every day to compare with the cash register sour cream cups sold
to cups left in inventory, did we screw up and give away any cups?
Well, a human is cheaper than an AI to do that. However, I would submit that finding the guy who can really make exactly the right number of hamburgers for the afternoon rush.
Right.
That's probably worth something, and I could see, and it's AI because you're going to train it on as much data as you possibly can.
Also hamburger you. I mean, you train the humans by going and saying, we've learned from 10,000 restaurants the way to do this.
Humans can do AI too, absolutely. But yeah. But computers
not artificially. Yeah, it's just everything gets, you know, it's like my mushroom gravy at Ponderosa Steakhouse. You know, would you like a little AI on that? Yeah. Would you like a little robotics on that? Would you like a little blockchain on that? I mean, it's BS.
Speaking of AI, I mentioned this during our conversation with Douglas Rushkoff. Israel is deploying AI-powered turrets. This, to me, should be a war crime. I mean, I feel like this is creepy as hell. This is in the West Bank. You know, and if I've been through this checkpoint, the Sohada Street checkpoint in the city of Hebron, which is, you know, a place that you go from the West Bank into Jerusalem, and this gun is, they say, it's not a remote controlled gun. It's AI controlled. It doesn't shoot live rounds, but it does shoot grenades, stun grenades, tear gas, sponge tipped bullets for crowd dispersal. Apparently, it's not unusual to get protesters at the checkpoint. And so now
and it could just as easily fire bullets, too.
Of course. And how creepy is that, right? I mean, you know. These are people's lives you're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
To let an automated machine gun. I don't know. That's very disappointing.
I'll put this in a really trite way.
It's not going to work well, right?
Yeah, automation is always perfect.
Yeah.
It's also. I mean, this is trite and glib, and I don't mean it this way, but it just. Don't they have any PR sense? Except it's like
they don't know.
Extremist view of
they don't know.
They don't
want
it.
No, they don't know. Yeah,
yeah.
They think this is good. Everybody's
the bad guys. We're the good guys. Don't you all know that?
We're the good guys.
We're gonna protect ourselves this way.
A new theory. I have been told many times not to play this sound, so I will stop. but if you've been watching our shows, I like to play this sound over and over. It is a moaning sound coming from the PA system of American Airlines 1631. Apparently, though, many other planes have, both Boeing 737-800s and Airbuses have had this weird human voice coming from the PA system. It went on all through the flight. Flight attendants, came on saying, we know, we hear it, we can't get rid of it. The captain comes on saying, as far as I can tell, it's not a threat, so we're going to continue the flight. When it landed, American Airlines inspected the plane and, determined the sounds were caused by an issue with the PA amplifier. There was no external access to the system. In other words, we weren't hacked. If I play this for you, and I won't because it makes everybody crazy.
I haven't heard it.
Oh, all right. I'll play it for you.
I was going to cue it up in my own ears.
I'll only play a little bit of it. Maybe. Okay. Let me see if I can find it.
I saw the ad, but I never, not ad, I saw the headline, but never played it.
Yeah, because we talked about it on the show. And I actually played it for Steve Gibson. He said, there's no way. I said, look, you're an expert, I said to Steve. Because he's done this kind of thing, voice synthesis, things like that. I said, you're an expert on this. Is there any way American Airlines could be right that this is caused by a malfunction in the amplifier? He said, no, they don't make human sounds like that. But I think we found the answer. I'm first going to play this sound for you because you'll have the same reaction Steve had that I had, that everybody I've played it for. Has. Let me see if I can find it. Here's Emerson Collins' original tweet. Okay, I'm sorry, everybody, but I have to play it for Jeff because Jeff and Ant haven't heard it. This is on the airplane. Can you turn on my sound? Oh, wait a minute. I turned it off here.
Oh,
Turn it down. Let me do it. Wow. So this goes on through the whole flight.
That's so bad.
Keep it going.
How long was the flight?
Several hours.
Somewhere between an orgasm.
The flight attendant is going to come on in a second.
Ladies and gentlemen, we realize there is an extremely irritating sound coming over the public announcements. The flight deck is trying to troubleshoot, trying to turn it off. So please be patient with us. We know this is a very odd anomaly and none of us are enjoying it. So we do appreciate your attention just for a few more moments.
It went on the whole time.
That's
so
horrible.
Isn't that? It sounds like
gotten some credits.
And there's all sorts of theories about it has to be a hack, right? It has to be a human. Nobody believes American Airlines when they say, no, we investigated. There's nothing wrong with it. Well, AV.
That's just normal sounds.
Well, I mean, there's no. I'm sorry. No hacker has gotten in. There's something clearly.
No,
something
it's haunted, wrong. But there's
haunted,
no hacker.
No hacker. So a website, avgeekery.com, reached out to American Airlines. They said it's a hardwired system. There's no hacking. The PA systems on board our aircraft are hardwired. There's no external access, no Wi-Fi, no way anybody could hack it. There were some theories about this, but I think the answer is...
Drum roll, please.
There is on these devices a AI.
Here we go.
Designed to filter out human voices. It's a noise reduction system.
Okay.
And the noise reduction system is specially crafted to filter out human voices. And the theory that somebody came up with, I think it's AV Geekery, but the theory somebody came up with is, that's what happened. A malfunction in the amplifier, and instead of filtering out human voices, it filters out everything but human-like sounds.
So you're getting a high pass instead of a low cut?
Yeah, exactly. So precisely, high pass and not low cut. So instead, you got human-sounding noise.
From just the
from
ambient
noise.
Speech in the plane or
from the back, from the plane sound even. So I guess there's a noise. See, but I actually thought I had the article and it's not, but there's a noise reduction system.
Sorry, you weren't even going to bring this up, but then I made you.
No, it's a good story.
It's a good story.
Especially since it's AI.
See,
it has happened
on
other planes. I honestly, when I read the, and I wish I could find the guy who figured this out, when I read the explanation, it went, that must be what it is. A device that's designed to reduce the sounds of human voices, background talk while the attendant is speaking to you.
Right.
And if instead of cutting it, it did cut the opposite, which I think you could probably electrically, things could be flipped.
Yeah, flip it around.
Yeah. So it filtered out all but the human frequencies from the background noise.
What's weird is, isn't the normal setting for a PA system off, and it's only when somebody hits the button
right
that it comes on?
That was
the system was going on, too.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right. I see what you're saying. You needed something to even trigger it. That's done by hand. Yeah. Okay. But this is just, it was always on. Okay.
It has a mind of its own, now a voice of its own.
Yeah.
That's what the computer, that's what AI sounds like. It sounds miserable. It sounds unhappy.
This is from the...
I've been flying free at least two more times after this one. Nope.
There were a lot of theories on Reddit. One that it was a medical intercom, but that's not it. Actually, there's been kind of a mystery that a lot of people have jumped on, and then more people reported, we heard something just like that on another flight.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Bio replying to Casey Newton, Southwest has been inflicting psychological audio torture on unwilling passengers since 2015, but I don't think it's the same.
It just came out on the radio. I hope you like it. If you don't like it, Don't worry, it'll be over in about 3 minutes.
So this is some band, Gavin DeGraw, playing over the PA system. I don't think that's what's going on.
You see, there was this woman who was preaching on a plane.
Yeah, I asked. Oh, I'm sure. You know, people grab that stuff and do all sorts of stuff. It's the PA amp. I think Andy ended up having the final explanation. Anyway, it's something people have really glommed on to. Maybe by next week we'll know for sure. But that's the best theory I have heard so far. It's a noise reduction system gone wild. So we talked last week about Figma, about Adobe spending $20 billion to acquire Figma. Turns out there is an open source competitor out of Spain called Penpot. Are you familiar with that, Ant? Penpot?
No, I am not.
Penpot, as soon as Figma got the announcement, got purchased by Adobe, of course that's going to take a while to complete, saw its signups jump by 5,600%. And as a result, they've been able to raise $8 million in venture capital because people say, well, if it's worth $20 billion to Adobe, maybe this will be worth a little something. So if you're among the many people who say, Figma users who say, I'll never pay for it from Adobe, take a look at Penpot, open source.
That's the way it should be.
That's exactly how it should be.
Is that you have alternatives that people can do, and God bless Adobe, do whatever it can. God bless Figma's founder, make some money. But hey, here's another way to do the same job. That's great.
Speaking of,
I've heard of the, what is it, Inkspace, the other open source.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
More on design and graphics, but this looks more like UI as well as graphics.
Yeah, so Inkscape is Inkscape. Is like Illustrator, basically. It's an Illustrator clone. But Penpot, so the whole thing about Figma is collaboration, right? Mm-hmm. So Penpot is also team-focused. It's free. It's open source.
That's cool.
Does pretty much the same thing. I'm sure it won't have quite the polish of Figma, but maybe, who knows? I think there's great open source stuff out there, yeah. And I do know Douglas Rushkoff is also a supporter of open source. That's exactly the right answer. If you don't like it, make one of your own. That's why you all learn how to program, okay?
This is why I have hopes for Dark Sky, because it's Blue Sky. Blue Sky.
Blue Sky.
The Federated Twitter. The alternative. Blue Sky, because protocols banned.
Right. Really interesting story in Vanity Fair about Darth Vader's voice.
Yeah.
You read this too, Ant? I think it's really great.
It was one of those bittersweet things to see and hear about, you know, being a fan of Star Wars. But here we have AI in place, and this AI does a really good job.
Poor Jeff.
AI show.
Poor Jeff.
AI he doesn't like.
It's going to be more AI all the time. That's the future.
Oh, it does a really good job, though. It's not bad, and it's gotten his
approval.
I guess you could say seal of approval.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm glad it has gotten his seal of approval, because now the hardcore fanboys and fangirls out there cannot get out there and bitch and moan online about him not being the voice in the future episodes and yada, yada, yada. Look, this man signed off on it. He'd like to retire, and he's given all of the rights, so on and so forth. It's a nice, happy ending, in my opinion.
So James Earl Jones, the voice of Darth Vader, you know.
Legendary voice.
I do not
the
find,
breath of Darth Vader.
Yeah. I find your lack of faith disturbing. Is 91 now. It doesn't sound as much. I think I could do the job, but instead.
That would be no, sir.
With a Scottish accent.
You, but no.
I find your lack of faith disturbing. Oh, the Scottish Darth Vader.
Scottish.
Like that.
That's not bad.
The force is strong in this one. It's a new Darth Vader
Star Wars
approach.
Fans. Now you can fuss.
Now you can be mad. But this is the fascinating story. The company that's doing it is Ukraine. It's in the Ukraine.
Yeah, during this wartime.
Respeecher. This is the lead from Vanity Fair. Bogdan Belyaev was working from home When the air raid sirens went off, they hadn't been heard in the city of Lviv since World War II, but it was February 24th and Russia had just invaded Ukraine. When we heard that missiles were attacking and that our internet connection was dropping from parts of our country, we got into shelter, says Belyaev. That meant he, his wife, and their dog and two cats ended up huddling in the center of their building. It's a shelter in quotes because it was actually our bathroom, he says. There's a rule.
I needed multiple walls, right?
This is so sad. There's a rule of two walls. You need to be behind two walls. First wall is taking impact. Second one is stopping small shrapnel. But for Belyaev, the work carried on because he needed to. People on the other side of the world were relying on him, and the project was the culmination of a passion he'd had since childhood, Star Wars. He's a 29-year-old synthetic speech artist, and they were working on the voice. They had already done the voice of young Luke Skywalker for the Book of Boba Fett and the recent Obi-Wan Kenobi series. Now they needed to make Darth Vader's voice as it was 45 years ago.
It's a hell of an undertaking, right?
Yeah. But I bet you they've done it. I mean, I think this is something that can be done pretty well. In the past, you know, when Woody the Woodpecker retired, I can't believe I just said that, they'd get a new Woody. So, I can't say, believe
it was
I said
never
that.
The same. You know, it was two Darrens on Bewitched. The second Darren was never the same as the first Darren.
I know the voice of today's Porky Pig. And I swear to God, he could be Mel Blanc. He's really good. He came in actually in the studio and tried to teach me how to do it. He's a very nice guy, young guy, auditioned. The story is great. Was it a triangulation? I think it was. He called Mel Blanc as a kid. He looked up Mel Blanc in the phone book and called him.
Outstanding.
And he calls and his wife answers and he says, can I talk to Mel? And he talks to him. And Mel Blanc becomes a mentor for this, like he was 12.
Awesome.
And eventually he takes over and does the voice of Porky the Pig. So, you know, it's not unusual that artists...
See what do we miss without phone books? You see all this privacy stuff?
Yeah.
You
know, today it's called stalking.
Call up Mel Blanc. Exactly, Ant.
Anyway.
I get arrested for it.
Let me see if I can... Bob Bergen, that was his name. Greg is his name, not was. Great guy, the voice of Porky the Pig. This was a triangulation, episode 22. So I just refer
back. Talk.
Yeah. So he taught me how to...
in the middle of the scene where he's having a crying fit, banging on the door...
Talk like Porky the Pig.
Mother.
He kind of sounds like Porky the Pig.
Door. Mom, would you please open the door? Mom, goddammit, blankety blank, yakety yak. So I come in on blankety blank. But I have to
Wait a minute, you don't even get the first few sets?
I do. First job I ever had...
Good man.
He was there.
Yeah.
So it's 4 hours of that. You know.
Anyway, great guy. Bob Bergen, Triangulation 23. I miss doing Triangulation. That's why we're bringing some people in from time to time. It's so much fun to meet all these people. Anyway, great story. Highly recommend it. James Earl Jones, as you said, gave his seal of approval. It's okay if you use my voice. I hope they gave him some.
So now it'll be used in the movie. Is it going to substitute? You don't need James Earl Jones anymore?
No.
You don't need an actor anymore?
That's correct. The term was he licensed it.
Yeah. So you need an actor. You need somebody, anybody, to say the lines, and then they apply the synthesis on top of it to make it sound like James Earl Jones.
So everybody's having free. The Washington Post, you know, now AI can make pictures as fast as can be, and that's neat, and it's danger.
It's not dangerous. And wonderful.
Fakes. I agree. But it's all the moral panic. There, and give me some time there. You can get it up.
I didn't have it ready.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I got to be on the trigger all the time with me, Ant. You know, you never know.
Thanks. Moral panic.
Right, and it's always you can always use it for bad and good, and the fact that you can get all these neat pictures now, and everybody can get Dolly, this is cool. The fact that James Earl Jones can live on in the movie, this is cool. It's okay.
Yes. We should mention that apparently the Dolly waiting list is now eliminated, and anybody can sign up. Although I see still here it says
join Sergeant Rejoices.
Yeah, Dolly 2, which I don't know if it's the best of the artificial intelligence artists. I have to say Stable Diffusion.
It's kind of the OG.
It's the OG for sure. This one from OpenAI. Stable Diffusion is pretty
darn
impressive.
So I tried and tried and tried to get it and his competitors to give me a cover for Gutenberg parenthesis.
Oh.
And nothing would work out. It wouldn't understand parenthesis. It wouldn't understand Gutenberg. So I just got four actual designs for the cover, by the way.
Nice.
And your audience can...
Should we look at them?
Yeah, why don't you, if you don't mind.
Is this... here it is.
Fine.
Pick the cover. It's in a tweet, because Jeff doesn't do anything that's not in a tweet. All right, here's cover number one, the Gutenberg parenthesis. Oh, I like it. Some lead type.
For the folks on audio, it's kind of a parchment-looking background and then two pieces of lead type. They're actually braces, not parenthesis, but we'll go with
artistic. Ooh, yeah, you're going to have some problems with that one. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's, it could be changed.
So that's
cover one.
Yeah, the literal net may not like that one. Okay.
It may not.
Oh, again with the braces.
No, more braces that kind of didn't give it, but just kind of just a title, braces top above, and then the subtitle below in a box, white cover, I think kind of nice. And then it kind of makes the box at the bottom has a cursor pointed at it. So it's the old cursor trick.
Finally, we get some parentheses in here.
Then you have big parentheses.
Very
in
modern.
Colors.
This is much more
very
modern.
Very modern look.
Yeah.
Very sans serif font. And then number four, you have two parentheses, one filled with old type, one with modern programming. And everything's akimbo there, saying the Gutenberg parentheses and everything else.
In between. It's kind of like the trash masher on Star Wars. They're in there about to get squished. Yeah. So that's good. Some good choices.
Which one would you go with? Each of you.
I think I like this the modern one myself. But
which one? The three?
This one. Yeah. But I have to say, I kind of like the old-fashioned feeling of this, but I'm afraid it won't sell any books.
Yeah, that one, no. Three is probably.
You got the iAmp, Pruitt. What do you think?
I'm more with that one, three.
Right. Of course, remember, I'm the guy who chose the Twig album art. So maybe you shouldn't listen to me. I like it.
The Twig album
art. I like it. This is kind of what we did, by the way. They'd give us, I think, eight choices, and then we'd go through them and eight or nine choices.
Standard procedure.
Where did you go to get these designers? Did Bloomsbury?
I didn't do it. Bloomsbury, the publisher, did. They gave me about 10. These are the.
All right. I got an assignment for our audience. Midjourney, Stable Diffusion, DALL-E 2, whatever you want. Let's see some submissions for your ideas artificially generated for the Gutenberg.
Yeah, sure.
Because I know Jeff doesn't know how to write a prompt. We got to get somebody who's really... I don't either.
Isn't it amazing how prompt writing has become its own skill?
It's the new programming. I've said this before.
It is.
That programming doesn't have to be, the code that you see. It's whatever it takes to get a computer to do what you want. And when you're dealing with an AI, you need to speak its language, and that's all. And people are very good at it. I bet you we'll get some good ones. I do.
Yeah. I can't wait
to
see
it. Tag us on Twitter. I like seeing stuff.
Yeah.
Tweet to at Jeff Jarvis. Jeff Jarvis. At Jeff Jarvis. I haven't even gotten to your section yet, Jeff Jarvis.
Well, we do have some two events. You have some of this. We have the Amazon event and the Google search event.
I think we got it. Yeah, it was a little annoying that Google did a search event the same day as Amazon did its hardware event. Stacy really needs to weigh in on these. We'll let her...
Yes.
Next week. She's not here, but next week I'm sure she'll have quite a bit to say. She's usually invited to these. These are, by the way, they don't do them live. You have to be invited. A lot of the press isn't, and Engadget did get invited, so I'm going to be reading off of the Engadget live blog of the things Amazon announced this morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, with their annual fall showcase. Let's see.
If you want an easier list, Leo?
Yeah. You have one?
Down at line 58, because Axios makes everything short.
Oh, God. Axios got purchased, by the way. And there's a hysterical Atlantic piece. Have you read this yet? On Axios and the Axios style.
No.
Because Axios has,
a book out pushing the smart brevity.
Yeah, and one of the funniest things is that even though Axios sold... who bought them? I can't remember.
Cox
bought them. They did not sell the intellectual property rights to their style. So they have kept the property rights to this bulleted style, and it's thought that the, perhaps their plan is to sell this to enterprises.
Yeah, that's part of the idea. They have a book out on how to do smart brevity, and they're trying to argue to companies that this should become your new communication standard.
So the story from The Atlantic is about Axios telling every employee to buy 6 copies in a...
They can expense them.
In a highly unethical attempt to get to the top of the New York Times
just like list. Don Jr.
But then The Atlantic had the good idea of let's do it in the smart brevity Axios bullet style. The men who summarized the news at the bullet point loving startup Axios, Mike Allen, Roy Schwartz, and Jim Vandehei, may now be driving it. They have tried to tamper with their book's position on the New York Times bestseller list. And then the rest of it, he has even little special bullet points. There's a
why it matters.
Why it matters, and then a butt, and a butt. The numbers driving the news, but. And this is the thing I thought was juicy. The core technology was not included in the sale to Cox. It was spun off as a separate B2B company dubbed Axios HQ. They're going to do a Series A round. This is the greed Douglas Rushkoff was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
How can I make as much money as possible out of this? Anyway, a very funny parody, Robinson Meyer, both delivering the news and parodying Axios' style. So let me go and get the Axios bullet point list on line 58. This will be a lot easier
to
first
read.
Why it matters.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
Why it matters. This is the most significant update to Amazon's Kindle. So they have a new Kindle Scribe.
Well, yeah, the Kindle Scribe is a big deal, I think. It finally now has a stylus. And
it's the Remarkable. This is identical to the Remarkable 2, which I love and have.
But a lot cheaper.
Is it? $340.
$340 versus, what is it, $1,000 for the Remarkable?
No. It wasn't that hard, expensive.
No?
Well, I think it was more like $600, but let me see. Let's just go see. I still have my Remarkable, and I do like it.
Do you use it regularly?
No. $279, my friend. It's less expensive, not more.
What? Oh, okay.
I think you probably mark or not included, but still.
Yeah, still. Okay. Wrong. I'm
not
so wrong.
Thousands of dollars, no.
I thought it was more.
Yeah. So anyway, these Kindle Scribe 340, including a stylus, 10.2-inch display. Yeah, you know what I use the Remarkable for, and I will use it every December. I use it to do sketches for my coding competition, because a lot of times I need to sketch stuff out before I start writing code. So it's useful for that. But I'm not a handwritten note taker.
My handwriting is god awful. Yeah, that's why I was. My parents forced me to take typing before I went into the seventh grade, because they said every teacher's going to think you're an idiot.
Yeah, typing worked. In fact, that was very perspicacious of them.
It probably led me to journalism. I can type fast. Okay. Yeah. Did you take typing class?
No.
Yale. No, Yale's far too.
We don't have typing. We have writing.
You have people. You have people to do that for you.
Remarkable says it sold 1 million devices, so it's clearly a market that Amazon wants to get into.
Amazon ought to be in. Yeah.
$139 Halo Rise, a nightstand device that has a little glowing halo. It can track sleep without you wearing sensors or without putting a camera in your room. As you know, the Google Nest will do that also, but using the camera and the microphone. The biggest story, if you ask me, they've got new Echo Dot and Echo Studio speakers, newer, better audio and all that. But Amazon, as you know, bought Eero, the mesh router system, and the new Echo Dot devices are Eero extenders.
Yay, that finally makes sense.
Isn't that brilliant? Isn't that freaking brilliant? Move. Because, it's a win-win. Amazon wins because you're going to have more Amazon microphones and cameras in your house.
Right.
You win because you're going to have basically a subset. Eero is extenders.
You're going to have a mesh net.
You're going to have a mesh net subsidized.
Yeah.
There's a kid friendly.
I'll be eager to hear Stacey on that next week.
Yeah. I think that's a good move. And as long as they work as well as the Eero's own beacons, which is their extenders, then that's great. There's a new kid-friendly Echo Dot with children collaborate with Alexa to write stories.
Let me guess, with AI?
With AI.
Oh.
BMW is going to use Amazon's Echo in its next generation car in-car voice assistant.
No.
Although if you've heard the voice assistants, at least I know from Ford that they offer, they're so poor compared to the ones that even Apple offers and Amazon and Google. I would rather have a voice assistant coming from a company that really has some
expertise. I want my choice. And may I ask you, what kind of car do you drive?
I have a Chrysler 300, but it's not a new one, so.
I always think have all this fancy stuff.
I always think a Mafia Don is arriving at work when I see Ant. It's black, it's dark, it's scary. I just feel like, oh my God, here comes Tony Soprano.
Yep, get out of the way.
Well, now you know you can get radar in there to prove that he doesn't have anybody in the trunk.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah, that's a, who's doing that? That's a cool idea.
Where was it? You had that story.
I know. I'll get to it. I guess it's not.
Volvo. Volvo's this doing is why, yeah. My tweet on this is why you never see Sopranos driving Volvos.
in car, but there's a good reason for it because people leave pets and kids behind and don't know it. Most cars now have a sensor in the back seat that will say you left something in the back seat to avoid that. But this is cool because it will actually, if it senses a human or a dog in the back seat or in the car, it'll turn on the AC and keep it cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
So anyway, I know I went out of the sink of the.
Eero Home Networks will gain the ability to set a backup internet connection method like a cellular connection if there's a broadband outage. That's a really great fallback solution. It's a software update for existing Eeros. As long as you have the Eero Pro subscription.
So wait a second. Wait. So I use my, it takes the Wi-Fi off my phone and then makes that house wide or what?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Amazon's new $35 Alexa Voice Remote Pro coming in November lets you use the voice assistant to find the remote when it's lost.
Come on.
Okay, first you have to buy a remote. And then
you have to lose it.
If you lose the remote, well, we've got a new remote finding remote for only $35.
You have the tag for your tag for the tag.
Man, they're only doing this because they know people are going to fall for it.
Well, I guess it's in the remote itself.
What has happened to us?
I guess it is a remote itself that will answer when you talk to it, I guess. If you're in the vicinity. And it can hear you. If the Chihuahua ate it, I don't know if you can talk. While an updated $140 Fire TV Cube, but the Fire TV Cube is actually pretty good, offers more input options and will be available next month. The company also announced a new high-end TV line branded with Fire TV, starting at $800. Remember the
they had that before?
They had a cheap TV before.
They did have their own TV. It's cheap.
Yep.
Oh, I see. It's a little higher end. Okay.
This is a little higher end. Remember the Astro Robot? Didn't do anything except it would go up and down.
People.
They're getting some updates, yeah. It's going to have the ability to learn which doors and windows should be open or shut. So that if you leave one open and leave the house, it could scream like a girl. I don't know. they don't say what it's going to do. But that's the point, is you left the door open. Hey!
It's his neck up.
You left the door open! Hey!
So it's going to go... It's going to go... wandering around the house, mumbling to itself, is idiot humans left the window open? I always have to check if I left the window open. Can't they figure out to close the window?
The rolling robot will also be able to detect pets and capture a short video of the dog or cat in action. Trying to eat it, probably. A software development kit.
How much did that thing cost?
Oh, it was expensive, wasn't it? It was $1,000? I don't know. You can't even get it, right? Because you had to get... It's one of those, you know,
it was a day one stuff, wasn't it?
No, it was just you had
$999.
Yep.
Request an invitation.
It's a day one. You have to request an invitation to spend $1,000 on this useless robot. It's one of those day one editions. I wonder if there's any new day one editions, actually, come to think of it. I don't know. You can't.
Okay,
oh, here we go. Day one editions. Invite only. Request an invite. No, still got the drone camera, nobody wants, and the Astro.
Nobody wants.
I did get, and we use it, the sticky note printer that prints sticky notes from your Amazon Echo device. That was a day one that I bid on and got.
And you use it?
Yeah.
So because you printed things on the refrigerator? Is that what it is?
You could do it for that. What I thought we would do is tell it add something to our grocery list, and then at the end of the week, say, print my grocery list and take it to the store because it's got little check boxes and the whole thing. You can do
that's a lot of hoo-ha.
Well, nobody in the family
to
wants
the
to do it.
Yeah,
Lisa ended up just, you know, we've always had this pad, and she keeps writing on the pad. I say, honey, you got to tell the Echo.
The pragmatic person, huh?
So there's always like two items on it. Buy cheese for Leo, and, you know, I mean, it's dumb. It's dumb. Nobody else puts anything on it but me.
No.
Amazon says it's shaping most of its device work around the concept of, and you'll love this, Jeff, ambient intelligence.
Ooh.
He's not really bright. He's got ambient intelligence.
Well, otherwise that'll soon be called surveillance.
He's not the smartest guy in the world. He's got ambient intelligence. I don't even know. Oh, there's intelligence in the fabric of the mesh of the universe.
Well, it means that it surveils you, so it already knows what you want.
Amazon's hardware chief, Dave Limp. That's his name.
No, no, no. The poor man was born with that name.
He was born with that name. Dave Limp. Contrasted Amazon's focus with that of other companies that are focused on virtual reality. Limp said,
technology needs to be personalized and intuitive enough to adapt to you and your environment, not the other way around, Limp said. We call this ambient intelligence.
Was that limp enough droopy. For you?
That was droopy.
Droopy dog. Oh, I was drooping, not limping. Oh, anyway.
Technology needs to be personalized and intuitive enough to adapt to you and your environment.
Actually, that's, now that I think of that, Droopy Dog is really just a parody of the In Cold Blood guy, Truman Capote.
Truman Capote?
Is Droopy Dog just, it's just Truman Capote? I think it is.
Anyway, that. And that's your Amazon changelog.
Then we have a Google event.
All right, let's do the Google event. Oh, my God. Google is trying to reinvent search.
So there's a couple, Leo. There's another. I got another list down there, the 10 biggest announcements.
Give me another listicle. I need a listicle.
I'll give you another listicle. Hold on. Where did I put
what
it?
Line is the listicle on?
The listicle on 952.
52. Line 52.
B52. Do we have a winner
from
for
Search
Bingo?
Engine Land? The 10 biggest announcements from Google Search on 22. Is that today, the 22th? No, what does that mean?
Yeah, that was today.
Search
it's
on, oh,
year.
It's 2022.
Year,
oh, it's 2022. I'm like, huh?
What day are they talking about?
Today's the 28th.
Number one, multi-search expanding. They're going to expand. What's multi-search, Jeff?
Oh, shoot. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. I forgot.
Search by image and text at the same
and
time.
Text, that's right. That's right.
They're expanding that to 70 new languages. They launched it last year for English and U.S.-based queries. Oh, this is the one where you can use your camera's phone.
Yeah.
It's so kind of like Google Lens. And then it will give you both text and image, like you should do a stop sign or something.
And the general argument here is that search becomes more visual, and the TikTok, once again, is scaring everybody and showing the way. There was a story in the rundown 2 weeks ago that we didn't talk about, and that was fine. About how the kids today are using TikTok for search, and I tried it, and actually it's not that bad. And right. So I thought, oh, let me try it. And I tried it. I just looked for restaurants, and it actually wasn't that bad.
Well, now, okay, now explain. I've been reading this, and I don't get it. So let me go to TikTok.
Well, the easiest thing, look for restaurants.
On TikTok?
Restaurants near me on TikTok. And what you'll find is
I'm mesmerized by a young lady in her bikini. Wait a minute, let me...
Leo.
Of course. Sweep away from
Stop.
It. So you hit the search slot button, and you type...
In TikTok. Are you in TikTok?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And then what do you type?
Restaurants near me.
It says, here's what it says. You may like my body, Emily Retchkowski. Bikini try-on haul. Leo. Hurricane. White bodysuit outfit. The girl next door. Why am I getting
what
this?
Doing?
What have I
well,
done to
why?
Deserve this?
Why?
Restaurants.
We're gonna tell you why.
Restaurants. Because when it comes up, I can't turn.
Near me. There it is. Isn't that the top one?
Restaurants near me. Okay. And you're thinking it's going to get. Oh, my God.
Yeah. See? It's giving you not just lists of restaurants near you. It's giving you videos from inside them by human beings.
This is a restaurant I can't get to. Because it's in L.A. Okay, there's one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Here's a sponsored one from Benihana.
Benihana. Okay,
which is
well,
down in San Francisco. Let's see. Oh, here's another one. Restaurants near me, Los Dos Potrillos Parker, which is where? Not near me.
Where is that?
Denver, Colorado.
Did you turn off? Wait. Did you like turn off something on TikTok that says don't find out where I am?
Maybe.
No.
Probably.
I never do that. I wouldn't do that. All right, let me go.
Yeah, no,
but
no,
I'm on an Apple device. Are you on an Apple device?
Pretty sure I turned off location on
Let me go look and turn on my locations on TikTok.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Maybe that's why I'm getting all that Bikini-rich content. It doesn't know I'm in California.
Because it knows you have something to be ashamed of.
I'm not ashamed of.
it location is not allowed on my...
It doesn't even have location permissions.
Just for the moment.
Where do you... That's interesting.
Well, wow, this is weird because now it's not going to be good results. It did. Well, I tried it last time just before the show last 2 weeks ago.
So
I'm getting the same two restaurants.
The Denver one?
I got the L.A. one and
Isn't
the Benihana.
Funny? Those are the ones they paid for.
I got the exact same three.
It's advertising. Isn't that funny? All right. Well, forget searching on TikTok. Back to Google.
Good story, Mr. Jarvis.
Hey,
well, Mr. Grant,
we debunked it right here. It's good. Now that was worth a try. Let me go back to.
That's so weird. What a change from 2 weeks ago,
huh? Well, you know, if they're putting ads in, that's why. It does have like black-owned restaurants near me, best restaurants near me, restaurants near me, Detroit restaurants near me. Oh, wait a minute, I've got one. Restaurants near me, New Jersey. This will give me restaurants near Jeff.
Well, hold on. That's right. It doesn't. Okay, hold on.
That's you have to give it the location.
Give it the town. Now it works. Now it works. So give it Petaluma. My fault.
Oh, so because it doesn't know.
Sorry, Aunt. I screwed up.
Here we go.
Will you forgive me?
Here we go. Food Drinks NYC. It's a restaurant in New York called Petaluma.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No,
okay. No. That's a good one. That's a start. Here are five Sonoma restaurants. Well, that's close. You know, it's the same county. Anyway,
East Bay.
Yeah, this is good. I wouldn't say it's better than Google.
No, but I thought it couldn't possibly do anything.
Yeah.
Ooh, this looks good. Ooh, some nice shrimp scampi from Cafe Rustica where we get our pizza.
Okay. Moving along. Ooh. Item two, multi-search expanding. Multi-search near me coming soon. Oh, see, Google's responding, huh?
The devil.
Yeah. Zoom in on image and text queries by looking for products or anything via your camera, but you can then qualify it to say, I only want local results. So I could take a picture of shrimp scampi and say, where can I get that near here?
Find it near me.
That's nice. I like that. Google Lens translated text is now clearer. Well, I'll be the judge of that.
Okay. Well, yeah. So let's see.
Yeah. So they're putting a background behind it so that you can read it a little bit better.
Google. Well, that's before, Leo. That's before. Oh. The after is worse.
They're taking the background out.
The after is harder to read.
Great. Google iOS app shortcuts today. The Google search. I liked the before. You did too.
I did too. Yeah.
Oh, well.
We were being generous, thinking the before was the better.
Yeah.
No.
I just went to the one I could read.
Yeah.
Google iOS app shortcuts today. The Google search app for iOS will add shortcuts to make it easier for searchers to search, translate. Oh, you know, that's a nice way of saying, instead of giving you search results, we're going to give you things that we think you want. This is more of that, you know, knowledge graph thing where, I think this is the problem with Google is and I understand what they're saying is we want to give you what you want, not search results. What you don't really want search results. You want them qualified in a way that makes it more useful for you, and we'll decide how those are qualified. And I'm sure I agree with that. New search refinements. Google's rolling out new search refinements and aids for you when you search in autocomplete. Now, as you type your query, Google will present tappable words to build your query on the fly. If you type F-O, it's going to say food, Fox, Ford, Fortnite, forever, football, and then offer you Fox News, food near me, food, forever 21, Foot Locker, and
That's
Ford.
That's actually not at all useful. But
not at all useful. Okay. Autocomplete's going to happen.
Start with F-O.
Things that start with F-O. That's what that was, wasn't it? But I guess if you went to a third letter, it'd be better, right?
Yeah.
Google will allow you to refine your query after you search by letting you add or remove topics you want to zoom in or out of. So this is basically a new way to, you know, a new search UI or a better improved search UI. More visual information. Google's showing for some queries a more visually designed knowledge graph approach to the search results. So instead, again, when you search for Oaxaca, instead of getting the search results, you're going to get the Wikipedia, you're going to get an air flight, you're going to get a map, you're going to get weather.
Restaurants named Oaxaca near you.
And restaurants near you named Oaxaca. Explore as you scroll. As you scroll through the results, sometimes the more you scroll, the less relevant the results get. Google now has a new Explore feature to give searchers inspiration around their query, but not something that exactly matches their query. You getting the theme here? You don't really want what you searched for.
It goes back to your, do we all have to be good at writing prompts?
Queries, yeah.
Queries and prompts, yeah.
Google search today may show a section for discussions and forums for U.S. English results. So this is a response to people using Reddit instead of Google to search for stuff. It will, in fact, now give you a section called discussions and forums. It includes Reddit, Quora, and Edmunds in this example. Translated local and international news.
I want to actually tout. Are you on Chrome? No, you're probably not.
No, I'm on Firefox. Nope. Oh, no, no. And I'll tell you why I'm not on Chrome later.
You don't have Google Translate at the ready.
Yeah.
Go to Google Translate. Translate.google.com.
Yeah.
And put in the site hs.fi. You want it to translate that site.
So I can do a website.
Yes.
hs.fi. So that's a Finnish site.
Exactly. It's a Finnish newspaper.
Helsinki Sanomat. Now,
Helsinki Sanomat.
I could select translation.
Original or translation. So go back to the original, and of course, it will mean absolutely. You can't pick a word out.
Finnish.
Right? It means nothing.
Yeah.
But the translation. That.
News in Russian,
really
the most read, the latest.
Good.
Diamond of the
scroll
day.
Scroll down. It's a very good newspaper, and I now go to it every day because of Google Translate.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It really is.
Actually, and this Finnish one is important because of the explosion
the
of the Nord Pipe.
Nord Stream Pipeline, right? Yeah. The wonderful president they have.
Yeah. And the fabulous 3D printed meat.
Stop. And the restaurant critic tested the taste.
Wait a minute.
Stop it.
Why is this all blank down here? What's going on? It says information has not yet been retrieved.
Okay.
Because you're using some bad browser.
It's translating.
It always works instantly for me. What do you mess up, Leo? Jeez.
Do you know what your roof is doing or how your roof is doing? In this way, moisture does not sneak in.
That's an ad. Why is that not working for... Oh, jeez. Just use Chrome, will you?
I want to... Actually, now...
Hold on. You're getting the ads now.
I want the news in Russian.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
Let me see how the news in Russian is. Look at this. It's in Russian. Wait a minute. I like this. Was it Gavarit Moskva, says a Finnish family couple living on the border. That's good. It's really interesting.
How does it figure that
out? It left the Cyrillic.
This, by the way, this is three newspapers. This is the Dagens Nyheter, Politiken, and Helsingin Sanomat. They all are together publishing some of their stories in Russian. What is it doing to you? That's so weird. Gee, would you get a real browser? Would you stop
doing
this crap?
Doing it to me, too. I'm in Brave.
It's probably all the ad blocking I have running. Let me turn it off.
Oh.
Yeah. The 52 trackers were on this page. 48% of the page is... and it connected to 9 different domains out of 12. They were 9 of 12 blocked.
Most of it's loading for me, but a little bit is not.
Let me refresh. Without the blocker, still nothing.
No, still nothing for me. Yeah.
It's wrong.
Huh. Maybe so many Americans are going there right now.
It's because, the popularity of the show.
Because it's so popular. Yeah. So it has news, but it also has foliage. What's foliage?
I don't know. Some things don't translate.
Let's see what's most read here in Helsinki. Absolutely nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. How about HS Helsinki Sanomat Vision? Oh, is a normal toothbrush inevitably the wrong choice? There's a new threat lurking in the stock market. It's interesting that for the stock market image, they have the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, yeah, because it's...
That's the one that matters, huh? Putin's panic solution. They've even got alliteration in Finnish.
If only you had a decent browser, you would see the story I'm looking at right now, which is historical Helsinki come to life.
I actually enjoy Helsinki. The train station there is quite something.
It is. It's a wonderful place, a wonderful country.
Yeah.
And it's a sane country.
So you're saying if I used Chrome, it would just do it automatically?
Well, what I do is I just add the Google Translate into the Chrome.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
On the top, and I can just do it, and it works beautifully. So my point is that I can now read news. Finnish is a language I am never going to learn. I'm not going to know how to pick out any word, and yet I can now very comfortably read the Helsinki Sanomat, which is an excellent newspaper, because of how good Google Translate is now. So any language you want to go into, and now they're incorporating that in Google News so that you can get local views. You want to find out what's going on in Mexico, you can go to Mexican newspapers.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
So you could news from Mexico. Maybe do you search for news from or?
I don't know.
This is launching next year, so we'll have.
Yeah. So it's not there yet. I mean, the point is, all it's doing is bringing that translation ability.
I think that's actually
huge. And showing you more stuff.
I think it's really valuable.
Gigantic.
And do you think that's a response to Senator Klobuchar's snippet tax?
No, I hadn't thought of it that way. I think it's just the technology's gotten so good, they're just incorporating
translation
it.
Translation is
how
amazing.
We use this. Yeah. I mean, the Klobuchar stuff is driving me completely.
Yeah, she's made a deal, apparently, with Ted Cruz, so that's going ahead. This idea
it is truly
if you employ
awful.
Fewer than 1,500 journalists, Google has to carry you.
Which is just and so against the First Amendment. It's so against the First Amendment.
I'm sure court will throw it out. Although I don't.
Well, who knows what our courts now? Because the right wing is saying is doing a must carry.
Right.
You've got to carry our hate speech.
Yeah. We're only at 10 of the 22. So let me hustle along.
No, Leo. It was 10 things in 2022. This is frying your brain today. I don't know. It's not the 22nd of the month. It's not 22 things. It's 2022.
Here's number 10 in 2022. This is actually another good one. About this result displays personalization. So we've always had this about this result next to the searches that explains what's going on. It will now show if personalization, i.e. tracking, has been used.
Good. That's smart.
In the results. So I think that's really, really great. Very nice. Thank you, Search Engine Land, for breaking this down. The biggest updates from Google Search on 2022.
Can I have a fit about a story?
Yeah, sure.
You know what?
So did you read the New York Times story about the LinkedIn A-B test?
Yes.
So LinkedIn, with academics at MIT and somewhere else, I think, did a large-scale test of the loose ties thesis. And the question is, when it comes to getting jobs and getting connections, is it better to have strong ties or loose ties?
I don't know if I'm agreeing with you or disagreeing here, but this is a kind of a scatological headline or a
that's my point. I hate to tell you, Leo, we're going to agree.
A little moral panic here.
Amen. LinkedIn ran social experiments on 20 million users. Well, they did what everybody does. They did an A-B test at scale with academics,
happens all the time.
Views of what it is. This is what we used to do in job search. We tried something else to see if it worked better for people, and it did. So now we're going to give it to everybody. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And you know the New York Times A-B tests everything.
Sure.
So here's the New York Times demonizing the knowledge that comes from the ability to say, let's try two things in the market and get the feedback loop and then go with a better one for people.
They do say about five paragraphs in, tech giants like LinkedIn, the world's largest professional network, routinely run large-scale experiments in which they try out different versions of app features, web designs, and algorithms on different people. The long-standing practice, called A-B testing, is intended to improve consumers' experience and keep them engaged, which helps the companies make money through premium membership fees or advertising. Users often have no idea the companies are running the tests on them. In parenthesis,
what are we supposed to do? Have the cookie thing saying, we're doing a test on you.
In parenthesis, the New York Times uses such tests to assess the wording of headlines and to make decisions about products and features the company releases.
And so, guess what? That wasn't in the story. That was added in.
Oh, you think that was added later?
Oh, I know it was. Somebody had the original version and put it up. They did a test.
Oh, my God. Well,
so they didn't even admit that they do A-B tests as they demonize them. And what really bothers me about this, the reason I want to have a fit, is because we're trying to very much to get these companies to share data and to do tests, experiments, call them what you will, with researchers so that we can find out more about what the impact is and improve things for people. We want them to do more of this. And when the New York Times does something like this, and then probably Amy Klobuchar will come and write a law saying you can't do this anymore because it's evil, then we lose this opportunity to have researchers and companies work together. And it pisses me off. Thank you for my
opinion. The question the article raises was anybody disadvantaged
But that's a red herring too, because LinkedIn started off saying, well, we think it operates this way. And so everybody was operating that way. They said, well, let's test and see if another way might improve things. So for the time of the test, somebody was ahead and somebody was behind.
But you don't know until you do the test.
Which is good until you do it. Yeah. Red herring.
It's like saying, well, we're going to test vaccines and people who don't get it are disadvantaged. Well, yeah, but that's the kind of the nature of the test. And if the vaccine happened to kill people, then the people who didn't get it were not disadvantaged.
Right.
So that's why we test. So, yeah, I think that this is not, I think that's a little bit of a scary, dumb headline. Hey, we're running way behind. So let me quickly do our Google changelog.
Holy moly. What a time.
I know. It's too much fun. We're having way too much fun. Couple of quickies here. Chromecast with Google TV, the HD version, is now officially available for $30. Yes, you get your very own color bars, 1080p, HDR, and 8 gigabyte of storage. As a user of Chromecast with Google TV, the previous version, I highly recommend it. It's really, really good. They did a good job on that. Sometimes, we talked about Fire TV earlier. Not a fan of Fire TV because it's just a big ad for Amazon shows, Lord of the Rings takes over the whole thing. Chromecast is good. They don't really do that. It's a good interface. I think they did a good job.
Leo, you have, I presume you have them all. So you have Fire, you have Chromecast, you have Apple TV, you have Roku, all of them.
Yep.
What's your go-to?
Usually Apple TV, I'm sorry to say. It's the most expensive of them. The only one that I have that's equally expensive is the NVIDIA Shield, which is Android TV. It's not as good because Android TV just does not offer the same range of channels. Apple TV seems to have the most premium channels. I think Roku, if somebody just said, well, what should I get? Roku is so inexpensive. It's less than $100. It's technically probably as good as Apple TV or almost as good as Apple TV. I think Apple TV is a little better because it has a better processor in it. I think it does a better job of 4K HDR and everything. But I have to say, comparing head-to-head, the $30 Chromecast dongle with Apple TV, the Chromecast dongle price is pretty good.
Believe it or not, Xbox One.
Whoa, that's actually fine. Grandpa. That's a good. Wow. I used to use that all the time. And in fact,
Xbox One.
The original
televisions
plan
are all Roku enabled TVs here.
Right, exactly.
But the primary TV is got a Xbox One on it, and I have one of those Logitech Harmony remotes. Ain't that what they're called? And that just runs everything.
Actually, if you liked the old Chromecast, sad to say that Google has now discontinued the old Chromecast, the traditional Chromecast. Software support will continue. They really want to go with this Google TV version of Chromecast.
Good for them.
They've done this before. I was a big fan of Chromecast Audio. Do you remember that? It was just like a Chromecast, but it only did audio and an optical app. Yeah. Killed it almost immediately. They will continue to support the software, so you can continue to use it at least for the time being. Chrome now lets you search your history and bookmarks from the address bar. So that's a nice feature. I often open history to go back to a page that I accidentally closed or whatever. You can now at history, yeah, at bookmarks, ooh, or at tabs.
Ooh. Nice feature.
Follow that with a space, and then that will be a search.
Too bad you don't use Chrome.
Well, I'll tell you why I don't use Chrome. It should be in the Google changelog. Google has announced that they are moving to Manifest V3.
It's a story above.
Yeah. And I am not a fan of Manifest V3 because it will not allow my favorite ad blocker, Gore Hill's uBlock Origin.
You stop starving the journalists and the content.
Well, I don't care about them, but I do want to starve Google. So, yeah, I mean, you can make a case, and Steve Gibson did yesterday, that Manifest V3, which is part of, will be part of all Chromium versions, by the way, going forward, is better performing because it doesn't have to pass the content through all the extensions you've got, and potentially more secure, or at least more privacy protection. But I install what extensions I want. I know what extensions I have on there. If somebody wants to install Honey and let Honey see everywhere they're going in order to get those Honey coupons, like my wife, they should be allowed to. That, I don't think it's up to Google to say no. In any event, Manifest V3 will block that API that is used by a lot of ad blockers and other tools. It will improve performance, in theory, improve security. Firefox continues to support Manifest V2. Some browsers that are based on Chromium, like Vivaldi, say they will continue to support V2. Brave has its own way of doing things, so Brave probably won't be affected. But Microsoft's Edge, which is right now the number two browser, will in fact follow Google's lead, because both Microsoft and Google are ad companies.
When they call it a content blocker, what they really—it's not. It's an ad blocker.
It's an ad blocker. But it can ad block other kinds of content. For instance, I use uBlock Origin to block that annoying cookie banner. That's a good kind of content blocker.
You could use it to block bikini shots.
I don't think there is a filter on bikinis, but I'll look.
Well, he's only going to go so far, Mr.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much a guy could do.
You guys really don't.
All right. Here are all the new features and updates coming to Google Maps. Ready? Take a picture because it's going to be quick. Boom. Immersive view. Neighborhood vibe. What?
What's that? Wait,
you're gonna instantly see the vibe of any neighborhood through photos and
trendy
information.
Places.
Yeah.
To highlight neighborhood what's vibe about a neighborhood.
Yeah. If it has an artsy vibe or a food scene, man. Search with live view. Arrows and directions right on top of your view of the world. I really like this live view thing, which That's you'll cool. actually
never
be able
to work terribly well. I'm gonna try it again.
They've showed this at Google I/O for years.
I know, time and time and time again.
So it'll be rolling out in London, New York, Paris, San Francisco, and Tokyo in the coming months on Android and iOS. Eco-friendly routing for developers, because God knows developers need to practice eco-friendly. No, it means that you'll be able to put eco-friendly routing into your third-party apps, which I think is a great thing, like Uber and Lyft, et cetera, et cetera.
Great.
New map features. There you go. Android Auto 8.2 beta is now rolling out. Tweaks dock of cool walk redesign.
What?
That's the headline from 9to5 Google. If you don't understand what we're talking about, you're good company, my friend. Okay, fine. Tweaks dock. You know what? Watch All About Android cool and get
what
the inside.
Heck does that
I don't
mean?
Know. Ask All About Android. Just ask them. And that's the Google changelog.
Poof.
What's the vibe in your town?
My town, it's a mall. You know, what's it going to say?
Now I'm curious. Well, I'll do that after. But that's an exercise for later. Did you watch, I did, live on Monday as NASA nudged a asteroid?
Very
that was
cool.
So cool. And here's the coolest thing. Go to Google and search for DART. And your search results will be, whoa, watch out. Oh, knocked sideways by the DART satellite. The first time I did this, I didn't notice the satellite coming into the picture and knocking it sideways. I just looked and said, what's wrong? Something's wrong with Google. It's out of alignment. let me refresh.
Program something.
It's such a cool thing. The satellite comes in, hits the corner of the DART knowledge graph, and now the whole page is slightly tilted.
Nice touch.
Isn't that? I thought. Nice touch. I just ignored it. I thought, oh yeah, the computer's doing something weird. Once again.
Nope, I'm not having a stroke.
Something's wrong. Isn't that hysterical? Have you watched the pictures of the DART? Did you watch it live? I watched it live. It was so
cool. I didn't watch it live.
We can
I
now see the results too in a second.
They were so excited.
They were. This is in the lower right hand corner. This is the NASA folks at Johns Hopkins University, watching. You know, their years of work become true. The satellite, which is traveling at 14,000 miles an hour, is homing in on that little dot, which is P. Didymos. I call it P. Didymos. It's just Didymos. But P. Didymos is, it's just, this is, it's a kind of a binary floating thing. I don't know. The left, the big thing is Dimorphos. On the right, the asteroid Didymos. They're going to try to hit it smack square dab in the middle and deflect it just ever so slightly, as one would do if it were headed for Earth. It's not. It's 7 million miles out, not even going. Wouldn't it be ironic, though, if they hit it and then it hit Earth? Like they accidentally knocked it into Earth?
Law of unintended consequences.
DART satellite or whatever it was, vehicle thing, the DART thingy, was launched last winter. It came in within 17 meters of its target, which, you know, if you aim at something 7 million miles away and you hit it within 7 meters, you've done pretty darn good.
That's crazy.
Pretty good. You see, we're slowly moving in, but it's going to get pretty quick as we get closer. As Dimorphos goes out of the picture on the lower left there, and we really focus in on Didymos, you can start to see features of the asteroid, like rocks and stuff and surfaces. And as you get close to it, you know, the last frame, it's like, that's it. we crashed into it, and the celebrations began.
Earth,
so you're saying
coming for you.
You're saying now what was left to do after this on Monday was to then see how much the asteroid was deflected. I think it's physics. I think they could pretty well predict it, I would bet.
Yeah, they can do that math.
Yeah.
If they can figure out how to get within 17 meters, they
can
do
believe
that?
7 million miles, 17 meters. Pretty impressive.
How big was this thing?
I don't know. Do you know, Ant, how big it is? Well, they'll talk about it on This Week in Space, I'm sure. I'm getting the feeling maybe it might
have 530 feet in diameter.
Oh, it's pretty tiny. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just looking at
how many football fields is that?
That
standard
would be,
unit of measurement.
That would be
3 feet in a yard. Is 100 yards.
It's a football and a half football field, but that's all the way around. It's the diameter. So what you're looking at?
Oh, actually, yeah,
is even smaller than a football.
It's a
field.
Pickleball.
It's a pickleball court.
Court. Yeah. Our new standard measure.
If I could fly 7 million miles and I could fly 7 million more.
Look at this.
Just
to so
be the satellite that smashed into your door. Thank you to Gumby.
You know, another thing about this, though, sir, is just how clear these images were.
Yeah. Look at that. Wow. As it gets closer and closer
that
to the
far away
surface.
Yeah. In the transmission, it comes back such a clear image.
Pretty
like
impressive.
This.
And how many millions of years has this been moving around, you know, unmolested, then suddenly out of nowhere, what?
Here we go.
What did I do?
It's the first time in history that human beings have moved an object in space intentionally, and it is the first ever planetary defense action. There it goes. It's dead, which means it hit the ground, and, of course, the camera immediately died. So you're saying
Minus 78.
We lost signal. We lost signal, and they're celebrating, huh?
Yeah, that's one time you celebrate.
How bizarre.
What line? Line
line 78 purports to show the results.
Images show the chunks, the large chunk of, look at that. There's a big dent in it. There's a dent in Didymos. Wow. Light There's Italian CubeSat for imaging of asteroids, which accompanied DART. So there was another satellite up there, released a set of photos on Twitter.
Yes, there you go.
That showed a Dimorphos with a big hunk out of it. Holy camoly.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, I mean, you said it was going, what, 17,000 miles per hour?
14, yeah. Pretty 14, fast. Yeah. Pretty fast. Wow. That's cool. Now, yeah. I guess the next thing is you've got to watch and see how far it was deflected and
that's
all
the
of
thing.
That.
Well, it's going to be, it's going to change its orbit around its cousin there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof, there's a big puff.
What was that? Was that the dust that was, coming off?
Oh, where you see?
That was the puff of smoke right below it.
Wait. Play that again.
Oh, it's in the same thread.
Yeah, so this is, I guess this is Didymos flying through the air. It just got hit. And there quite a bit of material got ejected.
Dude.
That's from a ground-based telescope. Amazing. Amazing. I think this is just really cool. Anyway.
It is. It is.
You didn't even need Bruce Willis.
Movies.
It is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing. All right, let's get our picks of the week. Stacy will be back next week. Douglas Rushkoff, thank you for being here. His new book is actually really a lot of fun, but it also is very thought-provoking.
It's fun to make fun of rich people,
too. Yeah, I love making fun of rich people. Let's see. Oh, and I wanted to plug one more time the fact that Cory Doctorow and Rebecca Gibley, his co-author, will be on tomorrow, a special triangulation, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2200 UTC. We will be talking about their new book, Choke Point Capitalism, which is really, if you enjoyed or were intrigued by the conversation with Douglas Rushkoff, kind of a continuation along those lines.
A sequel of sorts.
Jeff, well, actually, you know what? I'll be Stacy today.
Okay.
With a thing of the week, did you, I know, Ant, you must have loved The Matrix, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great movie. Movies.
Great series. I love the second one more than all of them.
Very famous in all of them, the rain, the green rain, right? And there have been screensavers and so forth. Well, there's a guy, Rez Mason, who has spent years of his life trying to improve on the green rain. And he has a GitHub.
Oh, dude, that's pretty.
You can download his code and also variations. So, in fact, Lily Wachowski, who's one of the two directors of the Matrix series, said it's actually probably better than we used in the movie. So this is all done in a web browser.
So that's it looks like we just went from SD to 4K.
Yeah, well, get ready. You want to go 3D? Look at this. Whoa. Green rain. They used a whole bunch of interesting glyphs, including some from Susan Kerr, who created the original icons for the Apple Macintosh. There's a holographic version we can't show you. You have to have a looking glass display. There's a mirror mode. This is from Resurrections. So there was a slightly different look in Matrix Resurrections. There's a whole bunch of varieties that you can take a look at and play with. Morpheus mode. Ooh, look at that. It's 3D and it's various colors. Mega City mode. This was in Revolutions. There's something about it that really is very attractive. There is a font you can get. There is a glyph database. There are command line options you can use to create your own. Very nice. This is Rez Mason. He's from Vallejo, California, just over
down the road.
The road a piece, yeah. At Rez Mason on Twitter. It's on his GitHub, github.com/REZMASON. He says coder, artist, something. So that's my Stacy's pick for the week. Jeff, you have a number for us?
Oh, what should I do? What should I do? What should I do?
All right. Decisions, decisions.
TikTok released its transparency numbers.
Mm. So, do you trust them?
Yeah. For this, I think this is saying how much they removed. So they removed total videos removed against total videos by quarter, less than 1%.
Hmm. That's kind of surprising. Given all the people I follow on TikTok are always complaining about how their videos were removed.
I know. 113 million. I see the stuff you watch. Exactly. From April to June in the quarter, 113 million videos removed total. Of that, 48 million were removed by automation. And then 5.8 million were restored.
So a certain percentage of them are brought back on appeal, but not a lot.
Right.
It sounds like the automated removal does pretty well.
So if you look at why they were removed, 43% because of minor safety.
That's a big one. That could be something like a kid doing something dumb, by the way. That doesn't have to be,
good.
Right. Yeah. Illegal activities and regulated goods, 21%. Adult nudity, oh no, we have bodies. And sexual activities, 10%. Violent graphic content, 9%. Harassment and bullying, 5.7%. The most important one, I think. Suicide, self-harm, dangerous acts, 6.1%. Hateful behavior, 1.7%. And violent extremism, 0.9%. Huh. Less than 1%.
Huh.
Is that.
Hmm.
What else is interesting here? I think that's by country. It's all purple. Who cares? total account removal. So account removal was fake accounts removed, 33 million.
Wow, 20 million because they were suspected to be under the age of 13.
Yep.
Wow.
Fake engagement, I'm not sure what that actually means.
That's probably
fake
more like
likes
bots.
Prevented 14 billion, I mean, billion. Fake follow requests prevented, 9 billion. Fake followers removed, 1.4 billion.
Yeah, that's interesting. Here's the spam numbers. And look, they've gone down. I guess everybody went over to Twitter.
Yeah.
75 million blocked spam accounts or blocked from creation. And then 76 million removed.
So I thought that was fairly revealing, actually.
Yeah, it's much, much better than it's been in past quarters.
Government requests, total government requests for takedowns July through December 21. So this is not up to date. Never mind.
Yeah. That'll come out. We'll get another one of those in 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Those are
and
sandwiches made
by
Salt Hank. Oh, sorry.
I never plug anything. I never plug anything.
Go ahead. Plug something.
Buy Gutenberg. The pre-order page for my book, The Gutenberg Parenthesis, is coming out next June, but it's up now. That just happened yesterday, so I'm very proud.
B-U-Y.
Way to go, sir.
G-U-T-E-N-B-E-R-G. bit.ly/ buy Gutenberg, which will bring you to
the upper right, it says U.S. You can buy it in five different places and different currencies.
Nice. Now, you've written it, right? This is how long it's going to take him to produce it.
I'm waiting for the copy edit next, yes.
Oh, okay. You still have to do the copy edit. All right. Yeah, this does take a while. This is why, Maggie Haberman's getting a lot of heat because her book contains an admission by Donald Trump that he took classified documents out of the White House. She knew about it in September, but that's normal. These books take 6 months to get out or more.
Or more.
You do wonder why she didn't mention it.
Yeah.
Could have said something. Just a little hint. Mr. Ant Pruitt.
Oh, what are my picks? Oh,
I have them right here if you can't remember.
I have to go down and look. A couple of weeks ago, I had one of my video monitors that I put on top of my camera break.
Oh.
And I needed to get a new one. So I ended up checking out OC Tech. I've seen good stuff about them, and I decided to try one out for myself. I bought the T5, and it is a solid dadgum monitor for the price. It was only like $130 or something like that.
It's very affordable.
But you get the scopes on the screen. You get to see your waveform, your false colors, focus peaking. And I mean, I'm like, dude, this is nice for $130. You just plug it in with an HDMI cable to your camera. Takes NPF or LPE6 batteries from Canon or Sony, or you can just use like a D-Tap battery power to plug it in through the DC port, and it rotates. You can rotate it to vertical, so if you want to shoot something for vertical video, it'll rotate its orientation with your camera. It's quite nice, considering that it's pretty much doing everything those Atomos Ninjas are doing, but it's a lot cheaper.
$125.
Wow. It's a lot cheaper. Yeah. And then I also have the I think it's the 7-inch Q7, T7. And it's the 7-inch version. It's just bigger. Does everything that I just said except it's bigger and it's brighter. It's 3,000 nits, so it's really, really bright outside.
Nice. Very good for anybody. This is mostly shooting video, yeah?
Yeah, shooting video.
You don't
video.
Need it for stills.
Yeah, you don't need it for stills.
Yeah.
But if you're shooting video, most of the time, those better angles, you're holding the camera like
right.
probably around your chest or so, or a little right. bit lower. So you can't see your viewfinder. That's why you need a monitor.
Also, this records, right?
Yes, you can throw a SD card in and record to it. I don't recommend that myself.
Oh, okay.
But because most SD cards are
not
slow.
Reliable and slow. Yeah, yeah. Very and nice.
My next one is a reminder
hold
about
on,
Adobe Max.
Hold on. Jeff wants to stick something in. That's okay. Hold on.
Well, I think this is, for athletic ant here, the plant bike race, plank bike racing video.
We'll get there. Let Ant finish his picks.
Well, he was finished. Oh, I thought he was finished.
Yeah, he's got more.
He's got more. Sorry.
Well, I'm finished with, I had a reminder in my mailbox about Adobe Max, and I said I'd mention that again because it's free virtually. So people go check it out. My friend Claudia, she's going to be speaking there. Mr. Dave Clayton, another friend of mine, he's going to be speaking there. And I
Where
said I
it?
Wanted to show him some love. And they updated the list.
Oh, Kevin Hart's going to be speaking.
So Kevin Hart's going to be there.
And Jeff Koontz. Wow.
And
Mr.
It's always funny to see those comedians because they're in a crowd of nerds, you know, creative nerds, and they come on stage
and
they
creators.
Do the Adobe sneaks where they preview some stuff that Adobe's working on. And, you know, they sort of wig out at the stuff that they're being shown in their own little comedic style. And it's pretty funny. Like, I remember Tiffany Haddish being there and John Mulaney being there and just having them interact with these geeks and nerds that are showing some really cool AI stuff on the stage. It's pretty funny.
I can't wait. That sounds like fun. And this is free. It's in LA, Jeff, but it's you could do it virtually. So that's the key, right?
Yep. October, what?
18th through the 20th.
Yeah. Very cool. Nice.
And that's it for me.
Ant Pruitt on Instagram, @Ant_Pruitt.
That's right.
Yes.
Check us out.
Go to AntPruitt.com and check out his free Lightroom and Capture One presets, too. I use Capture One. I'm going to check those out, download those. That's great.
I wanted to try the Capture One Tether on the iPad.
Yeah?
But then I realized it's another subscription.
Oy.
I was like, no.
Everybody's doing that. Oh, I want your cigar and whiskey preset.
Oh, yeah, I do have presets.
I like that.
People are asking about those recently.
That's the biscuit preset. I love it. Oh, that's good. All right. I will check those out. Thank you, Ant.
Yeah, those are free. Just go to the website and you can download them.
All right, Jeff, give me a video. Where's a video?
Just to take us out here. Line 96. Is this? Tell me if this is something you've seen before. I have not seen it.
A plank. 96? Planking on
plank
a bike.
Bike racing.
Wait a minute. Okay.
Just
Michael Guerra, Italian cyclist.
Guy
uses his knowledge of physics and aerodynamics to adopt a plank position.
Oh, that's
because
awesome.
He's more aerodynamic.
I thought you'd like it.
It's downhill. He doesn't need to pedal. And look at that. He's
awesome.
Beating these guys because he doesn't have the wind resistance.
Aerodynamic.
Oh, dude.
And keep going. Keep
Can you
going.
Imagine being one of the competitors seeing him do this?
Wait till you see the guy on the motorcycle.
He's going to beat the motorcycle?
Yeah.
Wow. I can't wait to see this in the Tour de France. Wow.
This is awesome.
Some serious injuries.
Yeah, this could be very dangerous if you fell.
That's what I was going to say. It's also pretty ballsy to do this.
Really?
It's ballsy just to ride this bicycle this fast anyway, even sitting up. I don't know if it's any more dangerous this way.
So now watch the guy on the motorcycle.
He's going to actually pass a guy on a motorcycle. What?
Like, what? Double take. No.
He does it. Okay, that's a
now,
setup.
Now, wait, one more. The next thing he has to do is he's going to get off the plank, but the wheels are going so fast.
Yeah, you got
to
be careful,
He has to use
dude.
His shoes
Your core
on the
strength.
Wheels to slow down the bike so he can get back
into that's the hard
pedals.
Part. You can't get the pedals. Smart.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Okay, kids,
that's
do awesome. Not try
Don't
this,
do
at,
this
home.
At home.
I guarantee you that would be taken down from TikTok as being way too dangerous. That's crazy.
That's a pro athlete, so.
Oh, yeah. And a nut job.
Yeah. And then you could one second video, you could let me out of Dynamic Island, one line above.
Let me out of Dynamic Island, new feature on iPhone and iOS 16.
There's a furry hand
in the Dynamic Island who can't get out. You know what? I wouldn't mind having that app. That's a pretty
cute app. Yeah, I thought you'd
app.
Like that.
Yeah.
So those
Let me out of here.
Little light things to
I think that's a kitty cat stuck in the. That's a very kitty cat kind of thing to do.
That is.
Yeah. Jeff Jarvis, thank you so much. Director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York, the kind of place where you might get a class taught by Douglas Rushkoff and Jeff Jarvis. Wow. Wow. I envy those kids. That's fantastic. Buzzmachine.com @Jeff Jarvis. Ant Pruitt, we'll see you on Hands On Photography, twit.tv/hop. Don't forget his prints at antpruitt.com/prints.
Thank you.
And we'll
see
you in
the club. Buying prints. It's been great.
Everybody buy a print.
Thank you.
We do Twig every Wednesday afternoon, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC, soon to be 2200 UTC. You can watch us live at live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, chat live at irc.twit.tv. Or if you're a member of Club Twit, you can put on the Twit hat and chat with us in the Twit Discord. That's twit.tv/clubtwit if you're not already a member. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show available ad-supported at twit.tv/twig or on our YouTube channel dedicated to This Week in Google, youtube.com/thisweekingoogle, or subscribe in your favorite podcatch client. That way you get it automatically the minute it's available. And if they allow reviews, please do us a solid and leave us a 5-star review so that others can learn about the show known as Twig. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye!
Bye,
buddy.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android on twit.tv.